You're listening to Retronauts, a part of the HyperX Podcast Network. Find us and more great shows like us at podcast.hyperx.com.
This week in Retronauts, 1, 2, 5.
3, sir.
3! Yes, we did it. We've counted to 3, everybody. Welcome back to Retronauts. More specifically, this is Retronauts number 458, and we are talking about Street Fighter 3. We've done enough Street Fighter 2. We've had enough Street Fighter 2. Alpha, okay, we can do more Alpha. I'm agreeing, we're going to do more Alpha. We got to finish more Alpha. But for now, we are here, Street Fighter 3, and I am joined by 2 special guests. Let's start with our returning guest, please.
Hello, I'm Shivan Putt. You might have heard me on the last dozen Street Fighter 2 shows that they did.
Thank you. And please, our brand new guest, introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm John Learned, sometimes freelance guy, sometimes third strike junkie. It's great to be here.
Thank you for joining us, John. You are here because you have made a lot of material about Street Fighter 3. We've talked about it several times, and you've got a whole... Why don't you talk about your video series?
Sure. So I have a modest YouTube page called Annotated Games, where I basically pick one game and do 20 to 25 episode series on that one game, breaking them apart, kind of seeing where all the references come from, what makes the game tick, what's running under the hood. I did 20 episodes of Castlevania Symphony of the Night a few years ago, and
love it.
My albatross, thank you. My real problem now is I decided to start doing Third Strike in 2018, going character by character, and someday I'll finish it, maybe before I'm 60, and we'll get there. But I'm about 4-ish episodes to go. We're sort of in the home stretch, but yeah, I love Third Strike. If you hold a gun to my head, it's one of my favorite games ever. I play it constantly, even still. So I'm very happy to be here.
Thank you for coming, John. And actually, while we're chatting, why don't you, because you have not been on a Street Fighter episode before, or even Retronauts mm-hmm. before, why don't you tell us a little bit about where were you when you entered the street of fighting? What happened?
Where I found fighting on the street where I was. Okay. So I was 11 in 91 when Street Fighter 2 came out, and I was I liked video games a lot. I had sort of kind of seen the light a few years before that when the NES was newish, and I was in an arcade in Toledo, Ohio, where I grew up, called the Red Baron, and I saw a couple of guys playing Street Fighter 2 against the computer. They weren't playing against each other. They were taking turns trying to beat Ken, and I was that kid in the arcade. I just didn't give a crap. I would walk up to people and ask them questions about what they were playing or whatever. And I was kind of dumbfounded. I was like, hey, is this game good? And these two guys just looked at me like I'm a jackass. And like, well, does it look good? So I'm like, all right. So I wandered off to the other open machine and I started playing it. I'm like, this is what I do now. This is the thing that this will be me forever. And so I've been a Street Fighter 2 fan for many, many years. I was one of the few jackasses that bought Super Street Fighter 2 on the Genesis when it came out. There's only, I think, like 6 or 7 of us out there. And I stuck with the series as they went on, as I moved on to other consoles, you know, the Alpha games on. I bought a PlayStation 1. I was the first kid in the neighborhood to get a PlayStation. And I was also that kid that would call the video store like once a week, like, do you have Street Fighter Alpha yet? Is it out? Do you have it? So I could go rent it. And I found that I didn't really like Alpha all that much. But I know. Air blocking doesn't do it for me. But so I came to Street Fighter 3. Like I was always that I'm a kind of the kind of person that I find it hard to let go of things. So like, even though I had moved on to other fighting games by the time I was, you know, getting older and I loved my PlayStation, Was starting to get into Tekken and other fighting games, and certainly all the RPGs that were on the PlayStation. I always kind of thought that, you know, if Street Fighter 3 eventually comes out, I'm going to want to play this. I have to see what it is finally. And I'm sure we're going to get to this, but, you know, I played Street Fighter 3 when it was brand new in an arcade. I'm like, this is it, huh? This is the game. But yeah, so not to get too far ahead of ourselves, I had a similar reaction, I think, as many, many, many people when they finally saw it. But we'll circle back to that, I'm sure.
Shivam, how about you? Where did you meet the three?
Okay, so as we discussed before, I was a diehard Street Fighter junkie for 2 and various other spinoffs of 2. And 3 came out in 1997, so I was like a sophomore, junior in high school. And by this point, I had already been like very deeply inundated into Super 2. I remember going to one of the first Fanime cons at the basement of a community college and paying a guy $1 to play Street Fighter Zero on his imported Sega Saturn.
Wow.
And so like, I was like super into this. And when I started seeing the images of this game, first off, I was like, what the hell? They made Ryu old? What's going on? But he looked so sick. And the first time you see Ryu walk out there with a duffel bag, drop it, and you see that whole fluid animation of him walking and having just that intro. And like, if Ken is there, him doing the fist bump with Ken. And I was like, oh, this is sweet. And then I realized that none of the other characters were anything I'd ever heard of before. They were all super weird. I didn't know what was going on. But the game was so pretty. Imagine I'm in an arcade in like a pho restaurant, right? So it's not an arcade. So it's like 3 standing machines. Next to it is Time Killers. Do you remember that fighting game?
Oh, which has five
buttons where you lop off arms and limbs. And so you've got like Time Killers over here. You've got, I think it was one of the Virtua Fighter games, Virtua Fighter, maybe even the first one. And then you've got Street Fighter 3. And so you got 2 janky looking animation games and then this cartoon. And I was like, this game is sick. This game is absolutely sick. But then I tried playing it and I realized everything I know about Street Fighter no longer applies and I suck. So I stopped playing 3 for a long time until Third Strike came out. And then until I didn't really click with it until I started playing it on the Dreamcast later. But I was one of the few people who was just like, I need this game because of music, the character select screen, music alone. Oh my God, it's so good.
Yeah, I'm positive I saw it in arcades because I definitely was the kind of person who still went to arcades in 1997. But I'm also confident that I barely saw it. Like, I'm sure I saw it, but I also think I only saw it a few times, so I never had enough experience with it firsthand. So for me, it really was, this was definitely a Dreamcast game for me. Like, this is one that I bought for my modded Sega Dreamcast. So I got the Japanese version and I was playing the Japanese version of Third Strike, and just, that was, you know, I would say maybe an entire summer, maybe even 2 summers worth, where I played this game a lot and I was really into it. And that's in that sense where we could just sit there, a bunch of us as friends, and hang out with it and sort of work it and sort of pull it apart piece by piece. And that to me was more fun. So if I saw it in arcades, if I played in arcades, it couldn't have been more than a couple times, because, you know, it never reached, you know, as we're going to discuss, it didn't really get the reach and breadth of locations that Street Fighter 2, you know, Street Fighter 2, you couldn't miss it.
I mean, it should be noted that because I live in, like, when I was growing up in the Santa Clara Valley, Capcom was based here. So, like, a lot of the arcades that I would go to were Capcom test locations.
Yeah, right.
So, seeing Street Fighter 3 in the arcade was kind of like, well, of course they're going to put it. This is their home arcade, right? So, I got very blessed with Street Fighter.
Yeah, I'm jealous.
Yeah, that's... I think by the late 90s, most locations that I would go to, like, I'm still lucky that I had arcades to choose from, you know, both in the suburbs and
because this was before DDR really revitalized everything. So
yeah.
I mean, sure, if I went into the city and went to Chinatown Fair, like, it would definitely be there, but it's like I didn't get to go to Chinatown Fair that often. So, you know, most of the more local places or the malls nearby, like, they just didn't have Street Fighter 3. They would have had, you know, maybe Marvel vs. Capcom or one of the Alphas. Mm-hmm. So
Like, I never ever saw Second Impact, for instance. And Third Strike, obviously, once it became popular post facto, then suddenly every arcade had it. But when it came out, I definitely did not see that one in arcades either.
No, I've never seen, to this day, I've never seen a Second Impact arcade cabinet. And I've only seen an American Third Strike arcade cabinet within the last like 4 or 5 years. And that I was dumbfounded. I walked into a barcade in Columbus, Ohio. I was like, oh my God, there it is. And of course, like, you know, the two player buttons were all busted and nobody could play competitively.
Oh yeah, no, my college had a Third Strike. It was sweet.
Really?
But my college arcade also had like a rousing fighting game scene. So we had like, you know, CVS and CVS 2 before it was really big anywhere else. Third Strike. We had all the tech. I mean, it was a fighting player's dream if you were into that sort of thing.
All right, so let's take a step back from our own personal tales, and let's talk about the tale of Street Fighter III, because it started a lot earlier than you might think. According to the interviews, and we'll link to some of these interviews in the show notes, but according to these interviews, the development started in 1994, and that new generation name, that wasn't a subtitle, that was it. That's what they were calling it, and it wasn't going to be a Street Fighter at all, which is pretty wild, but also kind of makes sense when you realize how it ended up. But yeah, the teams at Capcom started working on this game, and you know, they had the prototype, people were jumping around, and you know, famous, you know, well-known artist, developer Akiman looked at this work and he's like, yeah, these characters, they're not that great. What if you put you in here?
Right.
And suddenly pieces fell into place and it turned into a Street Fighter game.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at Street Fighter 3 just from like an objective raw standpoint, if you take all the skins off the characters and look mechanically, it does not play like any of the previous Street Fighters that had come out till then. Mm-hmm. It's a much more defensive game. It's a much more spacing and zoning game. There's much like fireballs suck. Projectiles suck in this game. This game like is balanced differently. It's flavored differently. And if you took Ryu and Ken out and just said, this is like, you know, one of the other Capcom, like, random spin-off Darkstalkery type things, I'd buy it. Everybody would buy it. They'd be like, oh, yeah. I mean, that was a big criticism when it came out. Like, in high school, we were like, that doesn't look or feel like Street Fighter. Mm-hmm. Like, why do they change all the characters? Where's my personal pet favorite from the 300 that were in Super Street Fighter 2 or whatever? You know, it felt so fundamentally different that I think if you didn't have those linchpin characters of Ryu and Ken, it would not have clicked at all. It would have died entirely.
Well, it kind of did, but I'm sure we'll come back to that too. But yeah, it's, you got to give them some credit for really, you know, taking a big swing on a new cast, but probably the way that they had done it was clearly not the right move when they, Shivam's absolutely right. It took a lot of flack for not having as many returning characters as it probably should. At least New Generation didn't. They had slowly added more as the sequels went on.
I think Capcom has definitely learned from New Generation in terms of when we introduce a new Street Fighter, you can have all the new cast you want, but at least a third of them have to be people you know.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, now that it's been so many years, the roster is so deep that even if they do put out returning characters, they can totally just kind of like reshuffle their move sets and make them different characters like Nash in Street Fighter V, basically. But the recognition has to be there, right? If they're going to sell the game, if marketing is going to do their job, they're going to walk into those developers and say, all right, why don't you put like somebody people recognize in one of these games, maybe a few more of them, see how that works. But yeah, it's New Generation was spearheaded by a guy named Tomoshi Sadamoto, who is an old timer at Capcom who had been there since like the Section Z days. And he did the Slam Masters games. He was the lead on the D&D
Shadows Over Mystara, one of the best games of all time.
Yes. That game is spectacular. Very expensive for your guy's Saturn that you would have paid more than $1 to play. But anyway, he also, we've got some interviews that we're going to link to this too. But the interesting things about these interviews, if you read them, they have some sort of conflicting viewpoints on what goes on here. And, you know, according to Sadamoto, like, it was just him and a couple of guys, you know, they were just sort of tinkering around with what would become like their new generation project. It was like him and an artist and a programmer, like, yeah, let's just see how things kind of work in 94. And in 95, he says, oh, that's when things started ramping up. But if you read absolute goddamn hero Matt Leone's Polygon oral history stories, of all of these fighting games, including 3, which Sadamoto is not part of, he is conspicuously missing in this. Akiman and the other Capcom staff are like, oh no, we were working on this game like hard. We were really putting the time in on something in 94, and it was just flailing. Like, because these guys did not come from a fighting game background, all the like Sadamoto and the other developers he had, they had no idea what they were really doing. And it was clear that, you know, we're still in the zeitgeist of fighting games. We still have to crank out fighting games. That's our thing. But if this doesn't start taking shape pretty soon, if this doesn't find some direction, even though we've already spent a ton of money on this, we're going to have to scrap it. And and I think that's where Akiman kind of walked in and said, I'm basically going to save you here. I'm redesigning your characters. We're putting in a couple of older faces just so we've got some reference that we can work against with the new characters. But this is a hot mess and we need to fix this pretty soon.
Also, if we can be honest for a second, this is maybe the peak of Akiman's work. This is some of the greatest character designs he's ever done. Every character in the entire saga in Street Fighter 3, all of them are stunning. Just super absolutely distinct. Gorgeous, distinct, yes. Vibrant, and memorable characters. And one thing that occurred to me as you were talking, like, the early 90s was the decade of Street Fighter, right? Like, this is where Street Fighter was owning every single magazine cover. It was in every arcade. Everybody cared about the series, and Capcom was just churning them out. And especially, like, and then once we started getting the weirdos, like, you know, spinoffs, the X-Men versus Street Fighters and Marvel versus Street Fighters and Alpha series, Alpha 2 had come out in 96, and Street Fighter 3 has come out in 97. And when you look at these two games side by side, it is completely baffling to look at and see, like, wow, Capcom thought this was going to succeed. Like, Alpha 2 is a giant, beautiful cartoon. It's super fast. It's got all those custom combos. It's got gigantic fireballs that look like they come out of Dragon Ball Z. It's got all of the big bubbly character designs. And then Street Fighter 3 shows up, and it's just like, this old hardened Ryu, super just emaciated looking, all of these really different and unique looking characters. And the fireballs are back to being like Street Fighter 2 style, small little fireballs. And it's like, wow, this is, it felt almost like if a car was careening out of control with Alpha series, this is somebody just taking the car and like jamming the handbrake. And you're just now like, oh God, what's happening? You know, it felt like the seatbelt just jerks you back because it was so slow and stately compared to all the Street Fighter games.
Well, sort of to go off what both of you have been saying, you know, one of the behind the scenes notes is that even though Capcom was making so many fighting games, I mean, I would say Capcom has forgotten more about fighting games than we'll ever know. You know what I mean? But even though they had all this talent and all the staff, they really weren't working on Street Fighter 3. According to Shinichiro Obata, he said that 70% to 80% of the team members had no experience making fighting games.
That's so, insane.
Yeah.
They must have just been desperate.
he also said that the Alpha team, you know, because obviously the Alpha team was working. He said the Alpha team and the team on 3 never really shared much information, which, I mean, to me, like, working in Japan, that totally makes sense to me. Like, I understand, you know, if you've got a big company like that, it's totally possible. But you're also kind of like, where was someone above them to say, hey, you, can you have drinks tonight? Can you talk about this?
Right. Yeah, right.
Where's our Nomi Hodai to fix this, please?
In a weird way, that did become a boon to them later on when we get to Third Strike, specifically when we get to Chun-Li. But you're absolutely right. Like, it's a company that size that has cranked out a lot of games. And according to Matt Leone's oral history of the Alpha games, especially Alpha 1, all of those guys were brand new. Like, the Alpha team was basically like green recruits, rookies that they paired up with Funimizu And they're like, all right, Funimiza knows how to make a fighting game. Do it in 3 months. And they just like ripped the Band-Aid off and cranked it out.
Can you imagine how confident Capcom must have been at the time at the power of Street Fighter?
No shit.
That they're just giving this marquee series. Like today, it's unfathomable to think about like, okay, we're making a new Call of Duty. So I got these college graduates. Right. I'm just going to give it to them. Happy birthday. Bye. Like mm-hmm.
And do it before the summer's over.
Yeah, this is their golden goose. Are you insane? And yet. Yeah. And yet, somehow they managed to find one of the greatest fighting games of all time.
Right. The Alpha games did pretty well. I can't remember where this came from. Maybe it was from Sadamoto himself, but they're pretty open. Capcom now, anyway, is pretty open about the fact that like if the word Street Fighter was not on the title for any of their games, it just didn't do that well. Like the Darkstalkers games did fine. Star Gladiator came and went. The crossover games were good, but again, those are Street Fighter. Those had Street Fighter in the title since the beginning, so they did well financially, but everything else was only kind of so-so. So this was another reason that Akimon kind of came in and said, all right, we should probably make this a Street Fighter game because we've just sunk so much development into this at this point. But again, it took somebody like after a year plus of development to sort of come in and say, we got to right the ship, fellas.
I mean, it's just wild to think about, like, Street Fighter was, I mean, Mega Man was dead in the water. None of the other franchises that Capcom was really known for at the time were going anywhere, like 1942. Who cared about that in 1997? You know, like, Resident Evil, kind of on the PlayStation or whatever. But Street Fighter was the thing that was pulling the ship. So I guess whatever it took to put a Street Fighter out is what they needed to do.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the first Resident Evil was out, but that was one game, and it did very well. But, you know, they had...
But it's not Street Fighter. It's not a franchise.
Yeah, exactly.
And it didn't build the dynasty yet.
Yeah, it would be a few years, and, you know, they famously had to scrap Resident Evil 2, like, half midway through development to try and start right that ship, too. So this was a very challenging time for Capcom, I think. And one of the challenges they had was this was a game running on new hardware. This is the CPS3 board. It is not the first CPS3 game, but it is a very early CPS3 title. And, you know, the amount of work they're putting into this, you know, I think we've mentioned it, but we can just say it again. The animation alone in this game is kind of breathtaking. Mm. And I think it stands up 1,000%. You know, it just...
Oh,
every character has hundreds, even thousands of frames of animation. I think it might have been EGM that had they showed just a frame by frame layout of what Ryu does when he throws a fireball. Like they said, like, look at how many frames of animation it takes to throw a fireball. And, you know, it's a magazine, so obviously you can't show it emotion. But yeah, just showing it that way was kind of exciting for me as a reader. I was like, oh, wow, this does look good.
It was stunning, even something as simple as watching Ryu throw a fierce punch.
Yes,
you see his gi wave, you see his elbow kind of go out there, you see the strains in his muscles, and it's like, holy crap. You know what it reminds me of? I guess a contemporary example would be the food in Final Fantasy XV, which is like the most lovingly rendered salad you've ever seen in your life. But it obviously somebody spent like literal years trying to make this work. But then when you look at like just the way the fluidity of his pants, you can hear the snap of his gi with every kick. Like when Elena does her capoeira moves and is like flipping over, you can see the jangle of those like bangles around her arms and legs. And it's just, I mean, you could see the folds in Ken's, like, you know, the torn sleeves off. I don't know. I could sing praises of this game. I remember I wrote a report once, not a report, like an article. I wrote an article once just about Makoto's like throat grabbing animation in Street Fighter III,
yeah.
Which is like the amount of weight that they can get into just silently grabbing, pausing for a second, and then twisting right at the Adam's apple, and you're like, oh, I can't even hear that, and that hurt me, right? Like, that animation, that flat, silent animation just caused me physical pain.
I think you touched on something really interesting in that this, more than any other Street Fighter game, there is a weight to everything. Like, Ryu throwing a fierce punch, somebody getting popped with a DP, whatever. Like there is a tactile feeling of contact with especially the heavy moves in this game. And, you know, in certain instances too, like some moves will turn the opponent around. They'll make them spin in their place a little bit. And that just sort of adds to the feeling of just, you know, somebody's getting like hit with a truck right now. Like there is a weight to this game that I think a lot of people, you know, it's hard to sort of articulate it sometimes unless you like you're really paying attention to somebody really just getting smacked in the jaw, and it just looks like straight out of Raiders of the Lost Ark, right? Where like somebody gets hit and you hear that sound like a fist hitting leather or something that they make right. in the sound effect, and then like some dumb mook spins around like that. That is this game. That's just what happens to everybody.
Do you remember in Third Strike, Hugo's walking animation and his idle animation where he's walking and like mm-hmm. every muscle in his body is moving. He stops and his hair just kind of wiggles.
Yeah.
And he's got the weird twitchiness going on. And it's like, holy crap, this walk animation has more cycles in it than like the entirety of Super Mario Brothers did, right? It's insane.
I don't want to sound like weird and icky, and I don't mean it to be this way, but like when I first started playing Third Strike, Makoto's walking animation was the most beautiful thing I had ever seen. Like yes. just the slow movements of her arms, like how she would cross her legs when she would walk forward. And Makoto has one of the slowest raw walk speeds in the game. So you can just like, I mean, it's sumptuous. You can just get feast on every frame of that as it happens.
John, do you need me alone for a few minutes, John?
I'm a little verklempt right now, but
I'm just looking because while you guys are talking, I just Googled like animated GIFs from Street Fighter 3, mm-hmm. and you're just watching like Ryu's belt moving and his hair moving, and the fact that everything gave them weight, it gave them life, and like in Street Fighter 2, when you punch, yeah, there's like they make a standing move and then they make the punch animation and kind of like your mind fills in the rest. In this one, it feels like they did not leave any space for your mind to fill in. The entire fluid animation is there. And I don't think we've ever seen anything like, I think this and like Suikoden 2 are like the peak of sprite animation to me.
Yeah. On my 1UP blog way, way back when, I used to describe this game as like, if Ralph Bakshi made loony anime, this is what it would look like. If you guys know who that is.
If you don't know who Ralph Bakshi is, go watch The Hobbit.
Yeah, go watch the first animated weirdo Lord of the Rings movie from the 70s. But it's just an interesting looking, beautifully animated game. And it's we could be talking about this specifically for an hour.
We could talk about freaking, like punch animations of this game forever. But yeah, the CPS3 board, man.
Yes.
That was one of the big reasons why Street Fighter 3 didn't get a lot of pickup. It was a very expensive board compared to the CPS2, which everything else ran on. And that coupled with like the lack of popularity for this game made arcade owners want to be like, I'll just take another Alpha 2. Thank you.
Okay, but you mentioned CPS3. Yeah, so that's, you know, kind of in the animation, all these things come together because Capcom really, they knew they had to go big. You know, they weren't ready for 3D. I think at least one of these oral histories had someone say, we didn't even know how to do 3D yet. So they couldn't. You know, Tekken was already big. Virtua Fighter was big, but they couldn't go that route. They flat out could not do it.
No,
like, okay, well, we're gonna stick with 2D. We're sticking with 2D, but we're going to go the most 2D, the biggest 2D. And they went there.
In 1996, they did ask Akira to do, Arika.
Yes.
Arika did do Street Fighter EX.
Right.
Which is technically 3D.
But right.
Really, it's a 2D game that just happens to have really hideous sprites.
Yeah, and it's its own thing. Yeah. It's definitely like if you released that and called that Street Fighter 3, I think that would have been even sillier.
Oh my god, that would have been the end of the series.
Yeah, I think there would have been blood in the streets. I think there might have been riots from the nerds around the world.
I would have been right at the front, man. That game is awful.
Absolutely. It's got its charm. I know people that are into it, but it's
okay. I played a lot of EX. It was fine.
Yeah, that's fine. That's the way to put it.
Yeah, I played it on PlayStation. I had fun with it.
You know, I was young. I played Street Fighter. It was fine. But
right.
Street Fighter III Third Strike 1997, baby. That's the game of choice here. This thing, first off, like, I guess we should also mention that, like, aside from the fact that it looked so stunningly different, the fact that it aged Ryu another like 20 or 30 years, he's got like scruff on his chin, he looks beat and old. The music was 100% different from any other video game I'd ever heard. It was this jazzy, vibrant, lively, poppy kind of sound. And it was wild. It didn't feel like a fighting game, right? Like, it was cool. I mean, nowadays we're like spoiled with Guilty Gears and all of these other games that have just these amazingly incongruous soundtracks to go with it. But Street Fighter III, when you're in the arcade and you're hearing Mortal Kombat's like super hard, edgy rock, and you're hearing Street Fighter II's weird, like, you know, 8-bit kind of jangle sounds, and then like the various other things, and then suddenly this trumpet starts pouring out of this machine. It's so wild. It was so cool.
Yeah, Capcom really had an aesthetic with all three of these games. Like, they're very like, the UI is very distinct, the character selects are very distinct, but like, this is, to your point, Shivam, I think this is a really interesting phase in how they treated music in their games, in that they were done sort of making, like, you know, sort of not hard rock, but the more driving sounds that went behind Street Fighter II and even some of the Alpha games, those were gone. I mean, they were sort of moving on to different musical, you know, different genres. And, you know, it sort of culminated in basically making all of Marvel versus Capcom 2 an acid jazz soundtrack, right?
Yeah.
So it's such a, again, like, just like the cast, this was kind of a weird big swing for them. Like, all right, we're going away from the stuff that we had been doing, but it's going to work. We'll convince people it's going to work. And then, you know, they weren't really that convinced.
I mean, the Street Fighter III soundtrack, I still listen to.
Oh, the Third Strike soundtrack?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. It's so good. But yeah, so should we talk about the actual game for a smidge?
Yeah, I think we should. But just before we get back there, I just want to mention the music, you know, to go on what you were saying, if you look at, so this is 90, Street Fighter III is 97, Third Strike is 99. So in that period, you also have Alpha 3, and you've got Vampire Savior, I think, is 97. And you look at the sounds, like, those three different games couldn't sound more different.
Mm.
You know, like,
totally.
I mean, all the Darkstalkers games have a certain sound to them, but it's always a different direction than the Street Fighter sound. But then Street Fighter Alpha 3 sort of reinvented its soundtrack altogether. You know, like, Street Fighter Alpha 3 sounds nothing like 1 or 2. And then Third Strike, even though there's some melodies that retain throughout the series, Third Strike sounds totally different than Street Fighter 3 vanilla version. You know what I mean? So it's like, they kept on, you know, if we're doing baseball, they just kept on swinging and just, they were knocking it all over the place. I feel like all these games are sort of different home runs, you know, they're breaking different windows in the stadium is what I'm saying.
I mean, I'll be honest, Capcom between like 1990 and 2000 could do no wrong. They were just like, I mean, they brought us with them kicking and screaming, even though people were like, Street Fighter. I mean, look, 3 was not regarded, let's be honest, before we sugarcoat more, because obviously we're fans of this saga, but Street Fighter 3 did so well that when Street Fighter 4 came out, it was basically Street Fighter 2, right? So,
right.
And Street Fighter 4 is my favorite in the series, but I'm not going to pretend like they didn't look at 3 and say, like, anything that's doing, we need to go the other direction of.
Yeah, Seth Killian, who was working for Capcom.
He's such a good guy.
He is a very cool guy. If anybody has a chance to talk to Seth Killian, shake his hand. He's a super nice guy, but he was on record when he was producing for Capcom that, like, Third Strike put Capcom out of the Street Fighter business. That's why it went a solid 8-10 years before they made another real Street Fighter game, a numbered Street Fighter game. So yeah, the art books, the various art books and stuff and histories that they put out, in the intervening years, like all the producers that they would, that whoever was making the art book would interview, would they'd all say, yeah, if we make a four, I don't know, it's probably not going to happen. And that, I mean, that went on for a long time. So Street Fighter III is quite the flop, especially New Generation. It did very badly. And if it did badly, even in Japan, you know, where basically mm-hmm. In its home, it was not going to be, you cannot call that a success.
Yeah, no, the game was too different, too wild, and just too so far away from Street Fighter, from what made Street Fighter 2 cool, that it was just hard for people to swallow. I mean, in hindsight, we can sit there and look objectively at this game as a piece of artwork, but when you want your Blancas and Zangiefs, and you come in and you get Alex, and it's like, what the hell is this crap? It is really, really hard to justify Street Fighter 3 versus what came out of 2 and Alpha.
Dig into some of those differences.
Yeah.
Like what made Street Fighter 3 different besides the way it looked is how basically, you know, how it played very different. And a couple things that I remember, you know, jumping out to me at the time. First of all, Super Moves only got to Street Fighter 2 very late. Basically the end of Street Fighter 2, they introduced Super Moves, but they were a big part of Alpha and they were a big part of the Marvel Capcom games. So when, yes. it was no surprise that Street Fighter 3 started with them. But 3 lets you choose. You basically, you have every character has 2 or sometimes 3 different moves, but you have to pick one. And that,
yes.
That one you choose at the start of the match, it's very public. So it's kind of, you're basically telling your opponent, all right, this is what I'm putting in my pocket. You know, what have you got in your pocket?
It was a cool metagame decision. I like that a lot, actually, because it allowed you, when you're playing the game, to sit there, you look at your character, you pick your character, they can see that you've picked your character, but in the choice of character selection, it's like, all right, so now you pick a Ryu. Do you want the Dengen Hadouken? Do you want the other one? And you have to choose, and it gives them a second to sit there and say, okay, if they're doing this, how can I meta against that? And I thought it's like, it felt like a card game. It had this very back and forthiness to it. It gave it a little bit more play. Like Alpha also did that. I mean, kind of. Well, no, I guess not until like Alpha 3. Alpha 3 did, but not Alpha 1 and 2. But I really thought that this was one of the cool innovations of 3 to let you have that kind of choice. Not that anybody ever picked more than like the one good one for each character.
Not all supers were created equal.
Well, they're not. Yeah. And Sadamoto has said when talking about New Generation, like the point of doing 3 different supers or giving people that choice was to give them some individualism. Like in his words, in one of the interviews, he was like, I think of Ryu as the Dragon Punch guy. And I think and the world thinks of him as the big fireball guy, you know, especially after the animated movie and the Alpha games kind of doubled down on the Shinku fireball.
Ken is
the Dragon Punch guy, right?
Is the Dragon Punch guy, yeah. Mm. And of course, the fact that they made Ken the lightning leg guy is like, what? Come on. But okay.
These games made that out of Ken. But anyway, so like this was Sadamoto's way of basically having the best of both worlds. So like they gave him the Shinshou Ryugen, which is one of the strongest moves in the game, but they also gave him 2 powerful fireballs. One of them, the other point of the supers too was to sort of balance the game toward new players, like basically give returning players handicaps. So this is totally bizarre to me to say this.
You think that there's going to be new players in Street Fighter 3.
Exactly right. Well, that was a problem. And that was something that, you know, as these games in arcades were going on, like the only people that were playing Street Fighter games or mainly fighting games in arcades in 97 were the hardcore, right? And that was hard to attract new players to go in and drop money into machines if they know they're just going to get stomped on by somebody that's been playing for 5 years. So Sadamoto has been pretty open about like, all right, we put some handicaps in these games. Like the Dengen is supposed to be Ryu's handicap super, which is hilarious because it's one of the most terrifying moves in Third Strike. But
but the thing is, so the Dengen Hadouken, for those of you who aren't just like savants of this, is the stun Hadouken, basically. Like you can charge it up and then hit it and it'll guaranteed stun them. Mm-hmm. And in Street Fighter 3, getting stunned is basically dying. But it is so hard to use when you're a new player looking at it and you're like, I don't understand what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, why would I ever use that? Yeah.
Because when you think his other supers were like, you know, the Shinku Hadouken, which is just a very solid, simple Street Fighter, Super Street Fighter 2 Super Fireball. And then the Shinsho Yuken, which is just like the, you know.
Yeah, talk about gut punches. Wow.
And the animation is so good on that thing.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
But now they pick Dengen and you die. And it's just like, all right, well, here we go.
But it is, yeah, getting back to one of your point, though, like, there is generally, as the games have gone on, this is more true for Third Strike than anything, but, like, as the games have lived for so long, there have tended to be, like, this is the accepted super that you use in tournament play. But not always. Certain characters, Ryu's a very good example. Like, he is probably one of the few characters in the game where all three supers can be viable. It's just most people pick Dengen. But when you're...
So tell me the last time you saw somebody play Yun and not pick Gen-Agent.
Exactly. Well, we'll talk about that. But so, like, if you're on a character select screen, and this is a game that doesn't have... It's not really good about what we call counterpicking. So, like, if you pick... I don't know, Balrog in Street Fighter 2, I'm going to pick Ken because Ken is good against Balrog. Like, with the way that Street Fighter 3 is sort of designed, that happens, but it's not as pronounced with the parry system. But at least you know, if I'm going against the Dengen Ryu, maybe I pick Akuma because he can teleport out of the Dengen if I get trapped. You know, things like that. You start thinking of that metagame in a different way.
Well, John, you said word. You said parry. Are we talking about Perry the Platypus? What was that word you said?
Yes, the platypus. The worst, Perry the Platypus.
Like, the best worst mechanic ever. I love watching people play Street Fighter 3. I love watching people parry. I hate parrying.
I can't do it.
Is
I really can't.
So hard. I've been playing Street Fighter 3 for over 20 years. Oh my god. Oh my god. For 20 years, and it is goddamn hard. So. Do you want to explain the parry?
I mean, I think maybe John can explain it best because I'm terrible at it.
Okay. The parry, we'll get this out of the way now. The parry fundamentally changes the psychology of playing a fighting game.
100%.
So it is the greatest and worst thing to ever hit fighting games, depending on where you land on this. Shivam is absolutely correct. I personally love it, but like there's a reason these games are still sort of controversial. Even amongst the Street Fighter crowd, it's because, like, of the parry system.
Street Fighter 3 has its reputation as one of the most skill-testing games of all time, and as being one of the games that, if you're a top-tier player, you master because it's so challenging in skill-testing, and that is entirely because of the timing and usage of the parry. Uh-huh. And the parry move itself, basically, like, my way of playing Street Fighter is I'm a fireball guy. I love standing back and throwing fireballs, zoning, doing all these things. The parry, basically what it is when somebody is attacking you, you tap the joystick in that direction, and if you hit it in the right frame, your character will do a thing called a parry, which basically they stick their hand out and nullify whatever that move that's coming at you is. We've all seen the great, Evo Movement 37, where Justin Wong and Daigo put on the parry clinic. But in essence, what you're doing here is you're just tapping the joystick gently enough to be able to make it register a move, enough to be able to make it cancel a fireball. And what that did in practice is that if you're standing far away and trying to play a Ryu game and trying to zone them and trying to just fireball all day long, they'll just sit and parry all day forever, and you will never get in. So it makes Street Fighter into a much more close combat, much more normals-based game, a much more, like, melee game. Because when you're mixing it up in their face, it is much harder to parry, as opposed to if you're standing 3 miles away and they can just go, like, tap and vaporize whatever's going to happen.
Right. So the parry is a very elaborate risk-reward system, essentially. So, if an opponent is standing or jumping at you and attacking, you tap toward them on the stick a few frames before it lands. It's not exactly like when the attack is supposed to
end. It's like a little window, but it's a very small window.
Right. And it's been adjusted over the course of the three games too. And if someone's trying to, like, sweep you, you hit down on the stick before that happens. Same as walking forward. But you can't just stand there and keep tapping forward on the stick expecting you to swat away every move in the game, because unlike other Street Fighter games, you dash forward and dash back with double taps on the stick. So you have to time the movement of your hand just so that you're not really, you know, getting yourself into worse situations. But essentially what you're doing is walking into danger and bestowing upon yourself an opportunity to counterattack. So it's not the thing about Evil Moment 37 and the Daigo parry and stuff like that. It's not just that he parried all those attacks. It's that the parry is a tool to give you an opportunity to either get out of a sticky situation or to basically counterattack a now open opponent, right? So Sadamoto is the guy that created the parry system, evidently. He and the small team in the early phases of the game, because they were all apparently big fans of combat sports like the K-1 and pro wrestling and stuff. I mean, these are the Slam Masters guys. So according to them, they wanted to make something that was sort of authentic to real martial arts. So like some guys aren't just going to sit there and block until it's their turn to punch back. They're going to start like parrying moves, swatting things away, trying to counterattack. And ironically, again, this was another one of those mechanics that he thought when they were working on it, like this will help new players. like if you get knocked down, you've only got like a tic-tac worth of life left and someone chucks a fireball at you, you can stand up and parry it out of the way.
Hell no, you can't. Are you kidding? What you mentioned there about the dash, I cannot tell you how many times instead of swatting that fireball away, I have run gleefully into it.
Yeah, you just like run head first into something like that, right? So the parry is, like I said, I mean, it totally changes the psychology of how these games are supposed to play. So like, that's why you see at high level play, a lot of empty jumps, like people jumping at each other and not attacking because they're afraid of getting parried from their jumping attack and then getting countered.
Oh, at God. The same time, it is so tilting when you get parried into like the follow up that just chunks you.
Right. And then there's so much third life. Of your life is just bled away.
Oh, my God.
But at the same time, like, you know, it's very, very, very dangerous. If you're Ryu specifically, if somebody jumps at you to do a dragon punch, because Ryu's dragon punch is only a one hit move. If you get parried, you're going to take a pounding.
Yeah, so, and that's, I think, a big part of why like Street Fighter 3 had such a hard time getting into the audience. Because Ryu in the old days, I mean, look, I'm an American. I'm sorry. I know how to say
it's
Ryu.
Okay.
I'm going to say Ryu. Some things are hard to break. But the fact that he, the most popular character, the mainstay of the franchise, was put into a game where he's objectively one of the bottom tier characters is just rough for people to swallow. They're like, I want to play my favorite dude. He sucks. He sucks out loud. And that's why Street Fighter 3 is a game that turned me into a Ken main, because Ken was amazing in this game.
Yeah, Ken's a gorilla in all of these games. He's
his
a monster.
Tatsu's, his super kicky thing is so much fun. And he's just insanely fast. Ryu is this old, slow, like, I almost felt like the designers just angrily hated Ryu in Street Fighter 3 because they were just like, we're setting him up to die over and over again.
He gets his comeuppance in the later games, but
yeah, but
you're
come
right.
On,
in
man.
New generation, he wasn't that good, and he had a two hit DP in Second Impact. But I mean, that's a good thing to sort of discuss here, not to totally take this over. But like Ken and Ryu in these games, Ken is a character that as the Street Fighter 2 games went on, all of his moves basically did extra hits. Like the Dragon Punch hit three
yes.
times with the Fierce Punch. His hurricane kick, the Tatsu, it wasn't a one hit knockdown like Ryu's. It hits many, many times, that kind
yes.
of thing. So when you're facing off, this is one of the reasons Ken is so good in these games, is that when you're facing off at somebody that is adept at parrying, you're making them work harder. So
exactly.
If somebody jumps at you, a three hit dragon punch is three parries. That's pretty easy to screw up.
But that's also like one of the things that makes like the parry system so beautiful when you watch a pro and they sit and do something like parry the entire super. Cause you have to parry every hit. And that was one of the big problems with Ryu is all of his things are just like, you hit me once and you parried it and I'm stuck in this animation. I'm not doing any more hits. And that was
yeah.
So
and then you're
miserable.
Just going to get beat on. Yeah.
Oh God, it made me so mad. But at the same time, Ken, this game and Alpha really just turned Ken from a palette swap into like one of the cleanest, coolest characters ever. I freaking love it.
You know, the money quote about parrying, I tried to Google this and I can't remember where I found it. It was either Tumblr or Reddit, but you know, someone complaining about Street Fighter 3, they're like, well, the parry system is too hard. Like, what's the point of attacking if my opponent's just going to parry it? And, you know, the immediate comment is, what's the point of living if you're just going to die? And
I mean, that's the thing. Street Fighter 3, if Street Fighter 2 is like playing dodgeball, Street Fighter 3 is like playing chess, right? Like, you are definitely going up there. You are definitely trying to edge out. I mean, like, I play a lot of Magic, right? I play a lot of Magic the Gathering. Mm-hmm. That's my game of choice. And when you see high-level play, it's not about I'm doing big chunks of damage. It's how am I getting the incremental advantage, incremental card advantage, incremental, like, just edging you one life at a time.
Yes.
And Street Fighter 3 was all about that deep incremental advantage. If you mastered the system, if you mastered parrying, if you mastered, like, later on the rolls, the dashes, how to do these movements, and then learn to maximize your normals. And you're just like when you watch a game of like Alpha or a game of 4 or 5 or something, you can see like huge chunks of the life bar just disappearing. In 3, it is much more slugfest. It is much more just like skin of your teeth type of level of just very close fighting. And if they were aiming for that, they hit a masterwork. But if I was coming off of Street Fighter 2, where I'm like, you know, fireballs do something, this was a very different game.
And video games? Well, so do we. We're Kinsey and Mark from Kyoto Indie Dev's Chuhai Labs. Join us twice monthly for games, silly Japan news, and all-around nonsense. We stink at making commercials.
We f***ing got this one, bro.
Be sure to stop by the Chuhai Labs Discord to chat about our games or ask us questions.
Chuhai Labs and the Nasty Labs podcast. We're legally the best.
Make room for huge plays with the HyperX Alloy Origins 65 mechanical gaming keyboard and the Pulsefire Haste wireless mouse. The Alloy Origins 65 has a functionally compact form factor, keeping the arrow keys without the numpad and function keys. The Pulsefire Haste is the lightest wireless mouse from HyperX, featuring a robust connection, up to 100 hours of battery life, and it's even water resistant. The Alloy Origins 65 and Pulsefire Haste Wireless. Keep your setup clean and clutter-free with the Alloy Origins 65 mechanical keyboard and the Pulsefire Haste Wireless Mouse.
The Hardcore Gaming 101 podcast is on a mission to rank the top games of all time.
I like the idea that when Bruce Wayne gets angry, he switches to the Batman voice.
Why do you have such a problem making boomerang shaped like a bat?
You mean jerk. Like Batman?
Not like Batman! Just make it for me, Bruce Wayne! I can't even with this guy!
It's a Herculean task, and I'd be lying if I said it hasn't taken a toll on our cognitive faculties.
Most people would be happy to have a job during a global pandemic. Dennis!
Hardcore Gaming 101, twice a week, every week, right here on the HyperX Podcast Network.
Make room for huge plays with the HyperX Alloy Origin 65 mechanical gaming keyboard and the Pulsefire Haste wireless mouse. The Alloy Origin 65 has a functionally compact form factor, keeping the arrow keys while ditching the numpad and the F keys. The Pulsefire Haste is the lightest wireless mouse from HyperX, featuring a robust connection and the precision you need to click heads. The Alloy Origin 65 and Pulsefire Haste Wireless, a terrific twosome to keep your setup clean and clutter-free.
It's a very different game, so let's talk about some of these different faces. We've established that of these 10, and that's it, Street Fighter 3 launched with 10 characters. Two of them are Liu Kang. The rest of them are just these new folks.
Random Joe.
Yeah. We've got Alex, who is basically a wrestler guy, and he is ostensibly the hero of the game. Like, he's the one who's he's the main focus of the attract mode. He's your hero. But he is like, he's a grappler. He hates shirts, and he loves grappling.
He's not even really a grappler.
No?
He's like a close contact. I mean, I guess he's got some grabs, but like he never played like it. I don't know. I mean, if he was going to be the main face of the game, I don't know why they didn't make him better. Like, he just kind of sucked.
Oh, like, he sucked through all three of them. Yeah.
Like, it wasn't until, like, late Street Fighter 4 that Alex actually became an interesting and fun character to play. But, like, he's got some grabs that are kind of vaguely Zangief-y, but really what he felt more like was a much slower Meteor Feilong, if that makes sense, from Super Turbo. Like, where he's rushing in, he's doing kind of these, like, multi-attack chains. He's got some grabs and some setups, but god damn, he sucked. He was, you played him once and were like, well, that was a quarter I don't have anymore.
So he's supposedly based after Hulk Hogan. So that's where the shirt rip comes off.
Sure.
That's at least 30% of Japanese video game characters are Hulk Hogan.
What really baffles me about him in this game is that they made an American character the protagonist of this game. This was a Japanese joint at a time where Japanese game development was still very, very strong. And it was still very common to have Japanese characters as the protagonists. Why? I'm not saying it's good or bad. It's just, I'm very surprised that they decided to make an American the protagonist of this game.
I think that's a good question, actually. Like, Ken kind of shared top billing, but it's weird to have Alex.
If you've got a buff blonde man, it might read as a little bit more exotic to a Japanese audience.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, okay. I mean, certainly
the Dragon Ball factor.
There is a big thing here where it's like blonde equals foreign and blonde equals international and blonde equals, you know, world. Like, we are Japanese and our hair is dark, but these blonde haired people, they're out there, you know? So I think that might've been a factor, but overall, I mean, it's kind of, I think if you look at the lineup as a whole, it's a lot less white guy, you know, they actually did.
Yeah, no, they actually went around.
Yeah.
Like, that's one thing I got to give credit to Capcom for. Like, Street Fighter 2 was Caricature City. Street Fighter 3 actually had, like, I think, honestly, aside from Ken, Alex is the only white guy in the cast.
Well, there's a literal white man.
Yeah, like Necro, but Necro is kind of like this zombie dude. Yeah. But, like, you've got Dudley, I guess we can go next down the line to Sean. Sean, of course, the fanboy who is like fully in love with Ryu and Ken. He's got Ryu's gi on. He's got like all of the move system that kind of looks pseudo Ryu, pseudo Shotokan. But he is a Brazilian. He is a pure on dark skinned Brazilian. And I was like, damn, this is rad.
Right. With a Japanese last name.
Yeah. Matsuda. Well,
a lot of Japanese folks in Brazil.
Exactly. Right. We need to camp out on Sean for a second. So yeah. Getting back to sort of the development woes of the game, this is the Street Fighter equivalent of what people talk about with Final Fantasy 13. It's like, we made something beautiful. We need to get this out the door today. Like, you need to finish this. So that's why Ryu was in the game kind of from an earlier stage, but they were like, oh my God, we need to finish a few new other characters right now. That's how we got Ken and that's how we got Sean. So they're not total head swaps of each other, palette swaps of each other. But with Sean is basically just an amalgamation of Ryu's normals and Ken's normals with different special moves, right? And Sadamoto himself has come out and said Sean was made to be a chump. Like, he was another way to handicap the game because he is Dan too, right? So, like, he has one projectile. It's a one-hit super. That does very low damage. It sucks. Right. And it's very easy to parry from a distance, but Sean was basically made for like pro players to either style on other pro players just to mess with them or to be like, all right, I'm good at this game. You're not. Let me pick Sean so we can sort of even the playing field a little bit. So Sean was made to be sort of a chump, but in doing so, it's really interesting to think this is going to get a little spacey, but like, Ryu and Ken are very specific, right? Both they've got a fireball, they've got a dragon punch, they've got the tattoo, but Sean has no fireball of his own. So, the Street Fighter 2 games are very, very big on fireball play, but Sean is kind of like a short range Shoto. He's got a DP, he's got something of a hurricane kick, but I think they had a thought experiment. Like, what if we took a fireball away from Ken, how would he play? And that's kind of sort of Sean. And I think that's really interesting.
Yes, it's interesting. It's interesting in like a you're exactly right. Thought experiment is the right word, and it should have stayed a thought experiment, because this guy is just so, like, he's interesting. He's got speed. He's got some really cool normals, and like later on, he gets that weird basketball he can throw. Mm-hmm. But in terms of actual in the game, I want to play this character. Are you kidding me? This is like, this game does not. I mean, one of the big problems is, for as stylish as these dudes were, the game doesn't respect the player in the sense of, like, and I mean this for New Generation, Third Strike is obviously different, but in New Generation, the game does not respect that I am putting in 50 cents to whatever a dollar's worth of tokens to play this game. And I have, you know, I want to give it a shot and I want to learn to do this. And they're putting thought experiments into the game that are just not well-formed characters that end up just sucking out loud, and it ends up being a really miserable experience. Why would I come back if Sean, if I pick Sean, if he's like the sweetest looking character I've seen, and he was awesome, but I sit there and I'm like, this dude doesn't have a, he looks like a guy who should have a fireball, and he's got nothing. He's got no like moves to speak of. Where do you go with this? Like, why would I come back if I could just go play Alpha 3?
You know, we'll come back to Sean and we'll answer some of these questions.
No, but just if you do the math right now, you know, this game is 10 characters. Two of them are the returning Duken. We've mentioned two new guys, and we've kind of already dissed both of them. Like, that's a fifth of the cast.
Yeah.
No, right. Mind you, the thing is, the next one we're going to talk is one of my favorite characters of all time. So I will give you, I will give you some goodness here. Ibuki.
I mean, literal. She's a literal ninja.
She is awesome. Ibuki is hella fun to play. She's got aerials. She's got air fireballs with her kunais that can be thrown out. She's got a lot of like maneuverability and dashing, and her character design is just sweet. I mean, Ibuki was hella fun. Like, one of my favorite characters, I think, in the saga, really, not just in this game, but she plays so well and is so much fun and can dash around and jump around in a game that's decided by mobility, and the fact that she can jump in, hit you a bunch, and then like zap right back out again is incredibly tactical. It's super fun.
Yeah, Buki's great. I find her really hard to play personally. Kind of avoid her.
Oh, she's way hard to play. I mean, she's not easy at all.
It's a hard game to play, period.
It really is. Her and Dudley, I think, are a little over engineered for this game compared to the other character. I mean, but like, you can Dudley see what the love went into. But yeah. Yeah, Ibuki is one of the reasons, another reason why the cast is small, because her hair apparently was very, very difficult to animate. And they were Sadamoto was doing it himself with her hair, and it was like piece by piece. But yeah, she's really kind of, she hit a good fan base pretty early on. And I'm glad they've sort of circled back around to her in the later games a few times.
Yeah, she's rad. She's such a well-designed and cool character. She's super fun. I don't know, man. Ibuki was probably the character that I play the most in 3 vanilla version. Her and like Elena, who was just hella fun to play as well.
Do you guys remember when like the magazines at the time were like, wait a minute, is Ibuki like the daughter of Geki, that lost Street Fighter 1 character? And I was reading stuff like that. I'm like, that is badass. That's the coolest thing I've ever seen. And Capcom came out. They're like, no. That's
yep.
No.
Different people.
Fart sound.
So next we have like Dudley, right? Dudley, the British boxer who's got sweet suspenders, this amazing mustache, and throws a rose when he taunts. Super sweet. One of the funnest ways to kill somebody in Street Fighter, by the way, is to kill them by throwing a rose at them, which is 1 point of damage. Yeah. Super good. The thing is, though, you write here that he's like Balrog but British. But the thing is, he doesn't play like Balrog at all. He's got no charges. Like, that was one of the things about this game, is that they didn't have anybody with charge moves, as far as I can recall. And Dudley felt a lot more like DJ to me than like Balrog or any of the other boxers. Because like, if you look at his machine gun blow and some of his other kind of moves, they have that same kind of tempo that DJ's moves do. But he was elegant. He was cool. He was very suave. Dudley was really, really fun to play.
He's really the anti-Balrog, right?
Yeah, he's way more elegant, way more, you know, cultured.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's also by design. Like Capcom has said a couple of times that like they made Dudley to be counter to Balrog because they all thought that, and this is a problem that they helped perpetuate, I might add, but like they always thought that like boxing characters in video games were all big, bad guys. I'm like, well, you made Balrog.
You made the biggest, baddest guy.
Exactly. Right.
My fight money.
So yeah, Dudley's kind of a make good there, but yeah. He's an interesting character too, in that like he's very strong. But in this game, these games sort of cherry pick a lot of. We'll get into this, I think, in Third Strike a little bit more. But these games sort of cherry pick a lot of mechanics from a bunch of different other fighting games. And if you think about like a small team kind of tinkering around that's never made a fighting game before, you can kind of see where that came from. But like what I'm getting at is that every character can super jump, like in a KOF game. You can jump higher if you kind of tap down on the stick and then up before you do anything. But Dudley has a very unique jumping arc in this game in that it's very low. So he is made to sort of get around fireballs and things like that because he's not floating over them to give somebody the opportunity to dragon punch them. Yeah. He's like immediately over a fireball and then in your face kind of thing. Dudley's a very cool character.
And his links are very, very cool. Like he's got a very fluid, like his animation, obviously his animation's fluid, but they also, in terms of the fighting, like the way his normals work and chain into each other, it feels like this dude is just coming at you and just throwing a boxing combination into your face and you're just getting beat on.
You're going to take it.
Yeah. It's really, really cool. Actually. I mean, that low jump of his is incredibly stylish and incredibly clever, right?
Like, yeah.
He can just jump in there, and then if you do like his ducking roundhouse into the sweep kind of thing, oh, it's gross. And all of his moves were kind of just named after characters after moves from like Ashitaina Joe and Hajime no Ippo, the old classic boxing moves. Because like his corkscrew blow is basically the one from Jose Mendoza in Ashitaina Joe. And it's just like you can tell these guys were like, I want to get my favorite boxing manga that you can't do with a Balrog, and we're going to do all the cool shots. Because Dudley is more thin and more like delicate looking than say Balrog was, it means that in his animation they can do much more of the classic like 1920s boxer style, whereas like you know Balrog is just walk forward and punch you.
Yeah, he's got a really cool idle animation. In that, if you watch most of the cast and they just stand there for a while, occasionally they'll do something kind of interesting, like Remy will shake his hands out or something, but. Dudley is, he's not just sort of sitting there with his shoulders kind of bouncing back and forth and his hands up. Occasionally he'll dance his feet back and forth, kind of like how Ali would do his little shuffle around the ring. It's very, very cool. A lot of love went into making that guy.
And he's a real, I said this before, but he is a really fun character. It's a shame that you started off with two of the worst ones. Alex and Sean suck. The rest of them are actually not awful.
I think we got the chaff out of the way, maybe.
Yeah. But speaking of weirdos.
Yeah.
Oro, the one-handed crazy hermit who comes in a cocoon and throws his boogers at you as a fireball. Okay.
I didn't know what to make. I did not know what to make of this character when I first saw him. I don't
know what to make of him now.
I didn't realize he was tied up. I thought he literally only had one arm.
That's what the animation made it look like.
Yeah, right.
I'll be honest. Oro grossed me out and I never played as him. I played as him like once or thrice just to be like, okay, well, I guess I've done this.
Yeah, Oro was, I think, not a big hit with even the Japanese crowd early on. He is a very odd character to play. He has projectiles. He's one of the characters in the game that can throw projectiles in three different angles, which is kind of cool. And Oro became a real monster by the time Third Strike rolled around. But like everything that makes Oro good was not in New Generation or even Second Impact.
Sure so wasn't.
A lot of people passed on him. But he, what can you say? We have to bring this up. Oro has an exposed piece of his anatomy in the animations of these games. And that actually did turn some folks off when they figured it out.
Yeah, it turns out people don't want to see Hanging Dong in their Street Fighter. Okay, I lied. He does have a charge attack. I just never used him enough to remember that. I'm just looking at his moves list right now. He had a really cool throw, though, where he would grab you and just kind of thwap you on both sides.
Yeah. He's kind of that, like, old hermit Master Roshi sort of, like, old Lesh character. Yeah. Capcom is very For all of their video games, they're very, very clearly riffing on the comics and stuff and anime that they're watching at the time. So, like, there's, you know, the Ryu and Ken relationship is you know, Shin and Ken in Hokuto no Ken and, you know, that kind of thing, right? So Oro is probably just a riff on Dragon Ball Z characters, but...
Oh, you can, I mean, you can 100% tell that. Just look at his animation. His face is old, wrinkled Master Roshi or... you know, Happy Hoplosai from friggin' Ranma One Half.
You can make an old man character who doesn't look like a goddamn alien, is the thing.
But would you be Capcom if you did?
Yes. Supposedly modeled originally after Helio Gracie. That's why he's in Brazil, supposedly.
Sure, why not? Yeah, next right. is the... less alien looking character Necro, the Russian pseudo Dalsim, who's like kind of like a fusion between Dalsim and Blanka. He's got like long limbs, he's got this weird like electricity kind of move, really trippy animation, looks very, very cool, but just played weird. It was in a game like this where you could just parry and counter, he ended up eating a whole lot of hits a whole lot of time.
Yeah, I think the stretchiness doesn't help if you know, a defensive game like this.
Yeah, no, it's more like just asking you to get your face clobbered. And he had some good like moves that would get him across the screen, like his tornado spinny thing. But overall, it felt like this is an amalgamation of random moves that they needed to put a skin on. And he just plays really badly. It's weird. It's like you don't feel good when you lose to an Oro, to a Necro. You're like, when you lose to some other characters, you're like, oh, okay, you know, maybe I could have done better. When you lose to a Necro, you're like, was I just asleep? What happened?
Yeah, I think when people really look at these games and wonder why, like, all right, even though there's a bunch of new characters, it's still a Street Fighter game. There's got to be somebody cool in there. And then they see somebody like Necro. I can see how they would be turned off by this. I mean, I like Necro. I think he's a cool, odd design, but like, the theme of this game really went hard into sci-fi and the metaphysical, and Necro is like really the poster child for that. And I think that kind of, that didn't do him any favors, I think.
Yeah. But we're going to move on to the actual anime related characters from this, who are the Wonder Twins, Yun and Yang, who, if you look, like, I remember when I was playing this on Dreamcast and my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, came in the door and she was looking, he's like, are you playing a Gundam game? And I'm like, what do you mean a Gundam game? This is Street Fighter 3. And she's like, yeah, but then why are you using Troa in your game? And like, you know, Hiro Yue and things. I'm like, what? And what I realized is that Yun and Yang are 100% Gundam Wing characters who were just transposed into Street Fighter.
Yep.
Like, if you look at the animation, not the animation, but if you look at the art of Troa Barton, who's got this long swath of hair coming over his front of his face, it is Yang. If you look at Duo Maxwell and stick a baseball hat on him, you've got Yun. So you've got literally Gundam characters walking around here. Like, it is unmistakably undeniable. Also, I love these guys. They were two of my favorite characters in the game. They played exactly like Fei Long did. They were super mobile, super fast, had really, really good animation. I was a Yun guy, but I was a Yang guy, but Yun was obviously the better one for reasons I still don't really understand. And they had one super, even though we mentioned that they have three supers, they only have one. The Ginnaijin, which Yun had, which like doubled him and then does a kabillion points of damage. The Ginnaijin, I think, deserves a moment of talking about. So first off, these guys are basically melee characters. They play like Fei Long. They dash in. They do chains of attacks. They've got Rekkaken style attacks. They've got like, it feels a lot like custom combos from Alpha 2 did. But there was this, I remember when you play this game, you see the list of supers and they've got weird Japanese names and you're like, I don't speak Japanese. I'm going to pick one at random. Right. And when you pick it, the first one he's got, the Yuhu, is this thing where, you know, he dashes forward and puts his upward punch, which is kind of like an anti-air super. It's hard to use, but you get what it's supposed to be doing. Then you've got the Sorai Rengeki, which is the one where he runs up forward, and if he gets a hit, then he does this kind of chain that does a mega amount of damage. Again, it's hard to hit, but you get what it's doing. The first time you put a Ginnaijin, suddenly he does this weird little mystical thing, and he gets shadows, and you're like, what did I do? What did I get out of this? And it turns out what you get out of it is basically, hey, I'm now playing Alpha instead of playing 3.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He jumps forward at, oh, it's like the Ninja Gaiden Shadows from Ninja Gaiden 2. If
yeah.
you want to go use 1987 references up there.
It's, so yeah, the Genei Jin is definitely, that is, it's custom combos from the Alpha games brought into a different game. And it's not so much a move as it is a tool. So it's, essentially it makes all of their moves have the same properties as a normal super move, which means you can juggle with everything. The attack data or the frame data is better. So usually they're faster normals. You can chain combo into everything. So it takes a lot of work to do a Genei Jin well, to really maximize the damage or do interesting things with it. But as a tool in these games, it essentially shatters the fabric of it. And, which is why Yun and the, so one thing we should say in that new generation is that Yun and Yang take up the same slot on the character roster. And if you pick punches, you're Yang or one or the other, you pick kicks, it's the opposite character. And that's actually a holdover from the original plans for Super Street Fighter II. Fei Long was supposed to be two characters that you would pick with either punches or kicks.
And it also goes back to the original Street Fighter II of Ken and Ryu being basically palette swaps of each other.
Yeah, which basically, right. So you pick one side or the other, right? So like, I will say, if you look at the strategy guides, the frame data on Yun has always been better in very subtle, weird, dumb ways. But anyway,
it makes me so mad.
I hate Yun.
I'm a Yang guy. I'm not going to lie.
I hate his guts.
Yes. Anyways.
I will. Yeah. Anyway. So the Genei Jin, and we'll talk about this when we get into Third Strike a little bit later too, is that like the Genei Jin, because it's such a difficult thing to use, even in the early life of these games in America, Americans didn't use it. They didn't know how freakishly powerful.
It didn't make any sense at all.
Well, if you play the Alpha games, I see how you can sort of wrap your head around it. Like, all right, I see how this works, but you know, the other two moves were just much more straightforward and the raw damage was high, right?
Yes.
So yeah, Yun and Yang
In a skill testing game, this is the most skill testing move in the game.
But it's a devastating tool.
Oh god, and it's busted now.
It's straight up unfair. And we'll talk about this in much more detail when we talk about Third Strike.
Yeah, like, I mean, basically what this allows you to do is you make a bunch of shadows behind Yun. Everything you do ends up, like, if you punch, then the little shadows will punch, like, a frame behind you. So you can basically sit there and, like in Alpha 2, when you go into your custom combo mode, and you could sit there and you get a bunch of shadows and just punch and kick and throw fireballs. This, if you know how to use Yun or Yang well, will allow you to basically create a setup that will triple all of your moves in terms of damage and combo ability. And if you learn to use like the juggles and the OTGs and everything in this game, it basically becomes like a one-hit kill almost. If you're doing it right, it's just kind of like you can just go into this chain and it becomes almost Tekken-like in the artistry of how quickly you win.
Right. And in a game that is so defensive and, you know, doesn't usually have such big hitting moves, the fact that, you know, with that super, you can create a gigantic chain of moves. That's what makes it feel almost broken, because it upends the entire nature of it.
Oh yeah, he's king tier in this game. And it's so all three of the supers, right? Like there's one that's a pretty straightforward option. So if we're thinking about Ryu, it's the Shinku fireball. Everybody kind of knows what that's supposed to be. It's a fireball that hits a bunch of times. And then there's usually like a nuclear option, right? So like the Shinshoryuken is one of the strongest moves, if not the strongest in New Generation. And then there's the Denjin, which is kind of what like people think of as the technically interesting, like odd man out sort of move. And that is why people sort of strayed away from the Genei Jin early on, because I mean, they weren't living in Japan. They didn't have all the resources that the Japanese players did over here. Is that, I mean, unless you're really sinking a lot of time into learning how to use Yun and Yang, the Genei Jin is not going to be an attractive choice. And it's such a freakishly powerful tool that, yeah, that's why you watch tournaments of Third Strike, and 9 times out of 10, it's a Yun player or a Chun-Li player finishing the tournament out. It's just too good. And I hate his guts.
It's busted in half.
Why don't we move on to Elena, the tribal warrior woman from Africa?
So, Elena, I love Elena. Her animation is stunning. It is one of, like, the most fluid, beautiful things in an already fluid and beautiful game. However, they gave her a Brazilian martial art instead of her random Pan-African, where is she from? I don't really know. Pseudo-Kenya, I guess. But she's studying abroad. And she's this tall, lanky chick in this amazing, like, bikini thing. Kicks the crap out of you. She's got incredible, like, kick moves and also a healing super, which was wild and super, super annoying because the CPU could always manage to get it off at the right time and you never could. She is hard to play, but cool, if that makes sense. Like, her timings are really weird because her frames, like, her moves take an odd number of kind of frames and they, like, chained together bizarrely, and they have weird lengths that are kind of unorthodox for normal Street Fighter. Her spacing is all over the place. Like, when you look at her animation, her legs look like they're independently as tall as she is. And it's
yeah,
just,
right.
It's like really, really weird to try to figure out where things would actually land. But at the same time, she's hella fun to play. She's super, super cool. And, like, you smile when you see her just floating around that screen.
Yeah, Elena's got her fans. You know, I've always kind of contended that, like, in a game that finally did away with a lot of the stereotypes that the earlier Street Fighter games are kind of known for, that Elena really doubles down on bad stereotypes. Like,
it's not great.
Real bad with Elena. But I mean, past that, we have to I have to talk about David Lee Roth for a second.
Yes.
So the animation in this game, beautiful and fluid as it is, right? Like, there has been a lot of debate amongst the super fans is this game rotoscoped or not? And this, it's been like this for years. And rotoscoping is getting back to Ralph Bakshi.
Prince of Persia.
Right. It's Prince of Persia. It's like you videotape somebody and then you take all the frames of what you taped or filmed and then you draw cells over top of those. So you're basically just animating something that you've previously filmed. So a big contingent of people out there are like, no, look at Elena, look at the way she moves. It's fluid, but that cannot possibly be rotoscoped. There's traditional animation technique in there, like smearing and bouncing and whatever the other terms are, until some guy on the internet, I can't remember who this hero is, but he was watching David Lee Roth's video to his cover of Just a Gigolo and found that there's a woman in a scene that does, like, Elena has a winning pose where she sort of, like, you know, does this sultry pant, like, puts her hands on her knees and sort of squats down. Like, my wife came in watching me play that one day. She's like, what the fuck is this? But it turns out that that animation is taken directly from a backup dancer in this David Lee Roth video. So parts of this game clearly are rotoscoped, and I just love the idea.
And she sticks her ass like 3 miles out.
Right. These filthy guys in Japan just watching this video 10,000 times over so they can get the animation of that right.
Like, if you want to talk about the amount of time that they put into frames, just consider the amount of jiggle that they hand drew into Elena. Like, because I'm looking at her sprite page on the wiki, and it's just like, guys, I get it. You were bored. You had a lot of time. But guys.
Yeah, it's a little icky, right?
Take your shower.
And, you know, there's some of that in Ibuki, which is still kind of gross because they're both supposed to be teenagers, right? But, like they really went for it with Elena. They really went for it.
Yeah. Ibuki, though, is, like, clothed, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
She's wearing a full-on suit. Elena is not.
Less so.
Well, let's move on to the most naked character, who is the boss, who you can't play as. And he's really
a
something.
Pain in the ass.
Gil, not Simpsons Gil. This is Street Fighter Gil. And he really looks, to me, he really looks like a SNK style, like King of Fighters, like weirdo. He doesn't, you know, he looks human, but he doesn't look like a person you'd ever meet. Like, what is this guy?
He looks
you
like
know?
Brawly is what he looks like.
Brawly, yeah. He's got the big, he's got, yeah, gigantic hair. Half his body is red for fire. Half his body is blue as ice. His fireballs, his projectiles, depending which one you do, is either fireball or an ice ball.
I thought that was actually really, really cool.
It's impressive. I mean, it's very impressive. The fact that he's, you know, most characters, they just, you know, they're mirrors, you know, they just flip around, but he's like, he's got two halves. So he has to be, so, you know.
Per the Street Fighter Wiki, Gil's asymmetrical color scheme was a device for Capcom to display the graphical power of the CPS3 board. In previous 2D Street Fighter games, details such as Sagat's eye patch would switch sides depending on which way the character was facing. Originally, Gil was to be colored black and white and utilize powers over light and darkness, but it was later decided to color him red and blue to show off the game's graphical power. And so that actually makes a whole lot of sense, because what I remember, one of the coolest things I ever saw when he first showed up, I was like, holy crap, this guy can do ice and fire? That's so crazy. Because, you know, like the fact that DJ has maximum written on his foot, because that looks the same both ways, regardless how you flip it, instead of like Mantis like they wanted. And it just, like, that's such an ingenious way to show off the detail in this game. I don't know. I thought it was super sick. I thought it was super, super sick.
Shivam, I did not put that together until just now, the maximum thing. I never.
Oh yeah, it's
like, I was today's year old when I figured that out.
Yeah, that was one, like, when you look at it, the way that they mirrored that sprite, so that M-A-X-I, max e mom. Anyways, it's symmetrical. It's wild, because originally it was supposed to say Mantis,
but that would flip over. Doesn't. The S wouldn't work. Yeah. Or the N.
I mean, it just didn't look good, but Maximum totally does.
Oh my
God. But yeah, so Gil is a miserable boss.
Yes.
Miserable boss.
Yes. In that KOF lineage of total BS bosses that are just designed to take money, yeah, Gil is, he's on that list.
Because if you beat him, you didn't beat him.
you have to kill him before he gets super, because Gil in New Generation has one super.
Yeah, he's...
It's the resurrection. It's awful. And
it is horse crap.
But the AI is so mean by the time you get to Gil that there's next to no way that you're going to beat him on a normal or higher difficulty before he gets super. So it's a hot mess.
It's cheap. It is cheap, man.
Is it even possible to hit him out of it, or is it literally impossible?
Yes, you can. But he's
you
always
have to kill him before he gets to full stock. Basically,
he will get some life back every time. But you can, if you time it right, you can maybe get him before he gets to half or more. But Gil is kind of interesting in the context of where games are at that point, and that, like, a lot of RPGs around this time were starting to really embrace the kill your gods kind of narrative hook, right? So, like, the Final Fantasy games got real deep into that by the time the PlayStation games came out. Breath of Fire 2 was already out for a few years at this point. So, like, you know, Gil is supposed to basically be, like, the Christian god on Earth that you're supposed to beat on, right? And that's another thing I think that American players, at least, were sort of not used to seeing in video games yet. And to me,
yeah, we hadn't quite gotten to the Final Fantasy VII level of, like, every other game, like Dragon Quest VII and
right.
Final Fantasy VII. Like,
same year,
Jesus
right?
is here, and you're going to kill him.
That's the same year. So it's FF7 is out in Japan by the time Street Fighter III hits, but it's not out in America yet. So
no. We were not trained to kill Jesus yet.
Yeah, not at that point. And, like, for me, as a 17-year-old kid at the time who grew up in a very Catholic family, this was, like, weird taboo to me. Like, I'm going to beat up on Jesus? Is that, are we for real right now? And I think that sort of thing gave this game a sort of mystique, right? Over time. And that, like, because it was a financial flop and it went hard into sci-fi and, you know, the metaphysical, that I mean, especially for me, maybe I'm just sort of projecting here, that, like, it gave the game sort of a dangerous feeling to it, that because people were just not used to seeing this kind of shit yet. We didn't have Evangelion in America at this point. And if we did, it was people bootlegging tapes, right? So Gil is a weird, terrible boss to fight, but he's an interesting guy, I think.
He was, I mean, like, all that was lost on me, because all I saw was this idiot that just would not die. And he was so stupid and so frustrating that it was like this, it really took a lot of the fun out of the game. Because, like, the bosses, I don't mind bosses being hard. I mean, it's fine for them to be hard, but it's not fine for them to be, like, obviously cheating. Like, mm-hmm. resurrecting in a game where none of the rest of us get to is cheating. And that felt just like, it felt like in a game that's testing your skill, in a game that's about how good are you as a person able to react and respond, learn and grow in this play, for the game to just outright out and out cheat just felt like a betrayal of the agreement that we had, right? Like, we're in this game. You're going to give me a challenge and I'm going to try to overcome it. You just being able to say, like, by the way, I had my fingers crossed. That's horseshit. Sorry. It's complete, total horseshit.
I agree. And I really think that that's probably why they never made a playable arcade version of Gil. He was playable when the home versions came out. But at that point, you paid your money, right? You're getting a console experience now. But yeah, I definitely agree. You're really getting robbed of something when you play against Gil, I think.
Yeah. So yeah, Street Fighter 3, it came out, it was a colossal flop.
Yeah.
And also, just in terms of once we all got over kind of the floppiness of it, the game itself just does not hold up. It is not nearly as good as its successors. And everybody from Street Fighter and from Capcom to the player base just acknowledges it and nobody ever plays it. Yeah, like, I've never seen a tournament level Street Fighter 3.
We've got a quote from Obata again. He said, "I personally felt that the game was incomplete." You know, he describes the first version again, as we said before. I think, John, you compared it to KOF 12, was it, or 13, which is like
Final Fantasy 13. Yeah.
You know, we got to get this done. We got to get this out. We got to get something on the market. Yeah.
So here's a really good example. By the time Street Fighter 2 Turbo came out, Ken and Ryu had air hurricane kicks. They jump in the air and you can perform it. And it's different in the later Street Fighter 2 games. They sort of diverge in what they do, but they're there, right? Those don't exist in New Generation. They exist in the other two games too. But like, I think that's a pretty good example of, like, you know, Ken and Ryu play like this. And even if you're going to adjust them, they still have to have these certain things that make them work. And yeah, New Generation was a game that clearly, like, they ran out of time. There was probably some higher up breathing down their necks at that point. They're like, you need to get this to the market now. You've spent so much time and money on this. It needs to get out now. And you can certainly feel that. And if you play it, and especially if you're trying to, like, learn a game like that competitively, it didn't work.
Yeah.
Which is why only 6 months later, we get
right.
We get the giant attack.
Yeah. Second impact comes into play. You know, somebody's obviously been watching Evangelion when they're naming these games. But second impact was, I mean, okay, I shouldn't take the lead on this because that's the one I played like the least of. But it did add extra characters, which was much needed. It added a bigger roster. It changed the timing of parries a smidge. It brought in bonus rounds again, which... bonus rounds were just such an iconic part of the Street Fighter experience, and it was cute to bring them back. And my favorite one, the basketball one, where you actually learn how to parry. Because here's the thing, and I should have mentioned this at the beginning, one of the things about fighting games and in arcades is that aside from maybe on the marquee, there might have been a little list of like moves, like do the Hadouken down to forward plus punch or whatever, right? Generally speaking, they didn't even have that much. So you would put your coins in and you would be playing blind, right? Like, we would learn through osmosis, watching our friends and stuff, being like, oh, he wiggled the controller this way, something happened, rad. Parries are not something you can learn by osmotically wiggling the controller and hoping something happens, right? Like,
no, you have to learn by doing with something like that.
When you introduce a fundamental gameplay system like that is absolutely fundamental learning how to play and win the game, and the first time you see it is because a boss just screwed you out of your fireball and you don't know what the hell he did or how, it's impossible. So in Second Impact, they introduced this thing because Sean's a basketball player, so they have this little area where a bunch of basketballs get thrown at you and you have to learn how to parry them. And being able to do that, where you get to just sit there and practice tapping forward and figuring out how to do low parries and air parries and stuff, it's a little bit of a bone to be thrown, and I welcomed it. I was like, thank you for at least giving me this.
Yeah, this is an arcade game, right? So, like, The consoles at the time did not have the muscle to play New Generation or Second Impact on them. It's not until the Dreamcast came out. So even though your PlayStation could play Tekken and your Saturn could play Virtual Fighter, they couldn't play the Street Fighter 3 games. So I paid $1 a game when I first found New Generation. I was at an amusement park the first time I saw the game. I don't think I told this story, but like the first time I saw Street Fighter 3, and it only said 3 on the marquee, by the way. That was right. Capcom's dumb way of marketing the game. But like, even me, I was like, oh my God, there it is. There's Street Fighter 3. Oh my God, it's $1 to play this? That's kind of bullshitty. So I spent the money I brought with me to eat lunch to play Street Fighter 3. But like, the computer's not going to sit on one side of the screen and chuck fireballs at you so you have an opportunity to learn how to parry. That's not how it works. So having something like the basketball mini game is a bone to throw at you. It's a good way of kind of giving the player an opportunity to sort of come to terms with what is an essential part of the game, that if you don't have somebody else physically there helping you out at an arcade, also spending $1 a game, that's a pretty big, that's a big ask, right? That's a big ask from Capcom to throw extra money at the game.
John, I just realized Street Fighter 3 literally took your lunch money.
Zing. Yes, I'll never live it down. Second Impact fixed a lot of the game, a lot of it. So it introduced a lot of things that are sort of under the hood. It did adjust parries a little bit, but a lot of what happened was that the team certainly saw what they had put out with New Generation. They were like, we're not done yet. We have to go back to the drawing board right now. So they brought in Hugo, which Andor from the Final Fight games is a classic sort of Street Fighter sister series as we think of them now, who was supposed to be a New Generation but was like half finished before they had to scrap him to get the game shipped. They put in Akuma and a Shin Akuma super boss, and Akuma was playable, and he's a goddamn monster in that game too.
This is before they were like, oh, what if we made him a balanced character?
Yeah, they did sort of crank him down a little bit. So Alpha 2 and Alpha 3 sort of did a lot to make Akuma a more palatable character, like for balance purposes. Street Fighter or New Generation did that a little bit too, but he's still just a gorilla in this game. But they put in a head swap of Gil called Urien, Gil's brother, who is a fascinating character.
Urien is awesome.
He is awesome. Sort of this Greco-Roman god type. Like if Gil is the Christian god, you can sort of look at Urien like part of the Greek pantheon. And they introduced gameplay mechanics with Urien that I don't think were intentional, that totally changed how we sort of look at Street Fighter now with the Aegis Reflector move.
God, that move. So the Aegis Reflector is maybe one of the most iconic moves in modern, like in Street Fighter 3 at least. Basically, he puts his hand out there and shoots this kind of mirror. It's a super art that makes his mirror appear in front of him that effectively creates a wall that moves with him. So he can sit there and then just basically beat you into this phantom wall, bounce you off it a whole bunch of times, which then uses like the damage mechanic of Street Fighter to reset kind of the way the combos does, so your damage doesn't keep getting reduced by the attacks that you're doing. And it's just brutal. It's brutal. It's hard to get out of.
Yeah. But Urien could reliably put people in unblockable states, meaning that like no matter what you do, unless you were good at parrying, it all kind of comes back to that. Unless you were good at parrying, Urien can put you in a no-win scenario. Other characters could, and these things are not brand new to fighting games as of Second Impact. But yeah, a lot of really interesting thought went into gameplay of, you know, the gameplay design of these characters. But it's still the second part of a game that did real, real bad. And it didn't really move the needle too much as far as sales, because I don't think I've ever seen a Second Impact cabinet in my life.
I've never seen one. I've only ever played this game when it was put out with the Street Fighter 1. There was the double, what the hell did they call it?
Double Impact.
Double Impact.
Double Impact, yeah. the double impact that came out for Dreamcast, where it was Street Fighter 3 and then Street Fighter 3 Second Impact, the only time I've ever seen or played this game. And it was weird. It's weird.
But I love it. It's okay. So here's a really, this is, again, this is my perspective, but Second Impact is basically a lost video game, right? So New Generation came out. It came with some fanfare. You know, the magazines were all about it. People were like, oh my God, finally they learned to count to three and all that. But like Second Impact came out as basically a make good on New Generation. But when New Generation came out, especially in Japan, like in Japan, the media, the print media over there really embraced fighting games a big, big way. Like we did here in the US too. But like, if you think of GamePro putting out their own like strategy guide supplements that they would like throw into magazines, and EGM would do something like that. Like there are magazines called Arcadia and Gamist in Japan that would put out these elaborate, gorgeous strategy guides that the Capcom staff would help them write. So it's basically here are all the moves. Here's all the ways to fight against the computer. Here are the ways to fight in tournaments if you're using this person in a tournament. And then here are pages and pages of frame data if you really want to pore over kind of thing, right? So clearly Capcom wanted New Generation to be a big hit because the Gamist strategy guide they put out for this thing is just hilariously gorgeous. It's beautiful. Mm. New Generation did not get that because the game came out so quickly after New Generation. Second Impact was...
New Generation hadn't worn out its welcome yet.
Right. And Second Impact came out so quickly that like all the really good players could still do the stuff that they did in New Generation effectively, but they're still like you and I, just sort of learning on the fly. And then Third Strike wasn't that far behind. I mean, they had a lot more development time compared to New Generation to Second Impact, but within a year, the game was dead because they had another update at that point. And there is almost no documentation about Second Impact online. There are very, very, very few people who know the real ins and outs of the game because no one played it and everybody stopped playing it almost immediately. It's a really strange artifact, I think, in like the overall Capcom oeuvre.
Now, what's wild is, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
But what's wild is that this is the same amount of time that was between Street Fighter II Champion Edition and Street Fighter II Hyper Fighting, but Hyper Fighting and Champion Edition both made gigantic splashes.
Totally.
People recognized them, understood them, and played them. Second Impact, which incidentally had a whole bunch of really interesting changes that happened to the game, literally didn't even exist. Nobody knew what happened. Like when Third Strike came out, I remember being like, how is this a third? Maybe they're just calling Third Strike as a riff on 3. I don't understand. But like, for instance, one of the things that Second Impact introduced that was like kind of new to Street Fighter even, or the Street Fighter 3 series, is it introduced EX moves.
Right.
Where if you do like a move, if you do a fireball where it's like, you know, quarter circle and punch, it's a fireball. If you do quarter circle and two punches, it's an EX fireball that does more damage and flashier and stuff.
And burns a little super meter.
Yeah, burns a little bit of your super meter, but it also changes kind of the way you can combo. It adds a lot of tactical maneuverability and a lot of like interesting strategic.
It opens up a lot more doors, yeah.
And this game also introduced the ability to like escape from throws, to do the like the character taunts. So there's like a whole bunch of cool things that came out in this that literally vanished because it just never happened.
Yeah, the tournament life in Japan for this game was minimal in fixing a lot of kind of the overall structure of the game by adding things to it. And I will say that like one of the coolest things about the Street Fighter 3 games past New Generation is that taunts boost stats for characters. So like not only does like Dudley throw a rose, but it also boosts his attack for his next attack. Mm-hmm. Kind of thing. I always thought that was cool and I wish that they would bring that back. But like they accidentally busted a couple of characters. Like Sean, ironically, became the monster of this game because there was a bug in the code that made him build super faster than other characters if he whiffed. His normals were really good. His special moves were fine. So like he became an awesome character and they totally like 360'd on that by the time, or 180'd on it for Third Strike. But yeah, so New Generation is, it's a sadly weird footnote that I wish more people kind of put some time into, but it's hard to, that's a big ask from me because we have Third Strike next, which is
It's hard.
One of the best video games ever made.
Yeah, like it's hard to say. Go back to the missing link when literally Third Strike is one of the greatest fighting games of all time.
It's only academic at this point to go back to Second Impact.
It's like, okay, well, that's clever and nice. I'm glad Second Impact exists so that we could have Third Strike.
Mm-hmm.
But Second Impact came out in September 30th, 97. So like October 97, November 97, something like that. And then in 99 is when we actually got Third Strike, which is wild to think about that it took 2 years for them to put out an iteration of a game that was essentially dead in the water. And I'm impressed that Capcom bothered to fund it even. Like, why would they do that? Because
that is a good point.
It doesn't make sense to me. Like, if you've got two failing games, maybe they were, I mean, and like Alpha 3 had come out and is already like, you know, one of the great, great games of all time. And it's doing well. All the other kind of pseudo spin-offs of Street Fighter were doing great. Maybe they just wanted to go back to the well and just see if the system had something. But like, it was weird because, you know, the design team left. So I don't understand. Where do we get, like, who decided that, hey, you know what? We need to do one more and let's make it a good one, guys. Because it ended up being literally the best one.
They got so much time to really tinker with Second Impact. It's a lot. And especially since, like, if we're thinking in terms of the alpha games, like the home versions of those of the alpha games are phenomenal. Like the PlayStation 1 version of Alpha 3, it adds the World Tour mode.
It's one of my favorite games of all time.
Tons of extra characters. Like they were clearly adding more stuff to games that were already pretty successful. Not Street Fighter 2 level successful, but pretty good, right?
Mm.
And I mean, somebody higher up at Capcom must have really believed in Street Fighter 3 and they're like, we need to fix this. Like this was a flop. We can fix this. And I think some things got jettisoned. Other things were really given to this. But holy cats, I'm glad they did. Because, yeah, you know, sometimes Third Strike's the reason to get up in the morning.
I feel like there must have been a sunk cost fallacy at work here, right? Because, you know, they've invested so much money. I mean, we had a quote here from saying, like, they estimated that they spent ¥1 billion, which is about $8 million, to get the first game even out there. And yet, at least the numbers that people have remembered over time, they estimated that they only sold 1,000 units of Street Fighter 3, like the original Street Fighter 3. And Capcom manager estimated that in the US, they maybe only sold 300 units.
Ugh.
That is so mind-boggling.
Compared to 3,000, just like for comparison's sake, compared to 3,000 of Marvel vs. Capcom, which is a game I definitely saw in a lot of places, you know?
Yeah.
So obviously those numbers are much smaller than early 90s anyway, because late 90s, early 90s are two different environments for the arcades. But I'm thinking this because they had already invested so much and because Street Fighter had been so big, I think they just said, well, look, we can't let it end like this, you know? It's like when, you know, Shiv, you mentioned Magic. Like, if I play Magic and I get my ass beat, I don't stop playing until I at least win one. That's how I do it. It's like, no, I'm winning one with this deck. This deck is good. I'm going to win one game. So I think, like, no, this Street Fighter, it's a good Street Fighter. It's a good Street Fighter. We got to get one win here.
There might also be, like, the sunk cost of the fact that the CPS3 board costs so much to develop that they're
probably
like...
Probably also a factor, yeah.
Did you know there are only 6 games that were put out on CPS3?
I believe it, because that's
3 of them were Street Fighter 3.
Yeah.
2 JoJo's and then some game called Red Earth, which I don't
even remember. We're finally getting a home port of Red Earth.
Yeah, it's Warzone, right? Red Earth, Warzone.
Right.
Yeah,
that's Warzone. Exciting to me.
I've never even seen this game. Wow, that looks hella cool. Oh my God, the art
is nutty,
cool.
Man. It is
Marvel
nutty.
Marvel Capcom 2 was Naomi, right? That's the movie with Naomi.
Yes.
Right,
so. Because the Naomi platform was just being able to port to Dreamcast was just such a winning move.
Right.
Dreamcast becoming like the fighting game system of choice.
Totally.
But so Third Strike.
Third Strike.
Let's talk about the most elegant and beautiful game ever designed. First off, the soundtrack changed. They added lyrics and they're awesome. I love the songs in this game.
Yeah, credit to Canadian hip-hop artist Infinite.
They're so good.
Yeah.
And then there's like a big SUV that you destroy in the bonus stage, whatever. But one of the things that was really, really cool about this game, and the game that the thing that I think actually made Third Strike playable and actually approachable and suddenly into one of the most elegant games of all time, is that they realized that parrying in 1 and 2 blew. And that what they needed to do was actually increase the wide, like increase the frame window wherein you could parry. And being able to do that means that you would be able to more humanly be able to actually parry. You could actually do it. And it was just like, holy crap, suddenly this works and it's cool. And once parrying becomes easier and people can start to explore and understand the system and they understand the elegance of the system, then it's like, oh, this is suddenly a really cool and neat game. And there's a lot of like just nuance here that we missed entirely because we couldn't figure out how to play the goddamn thing. And so Street Fighter 3, and the other thing they introduced was the guard parry or the red parry.
Red parry, yeah.
Which basically means that if you're in a block and then you do a parry move right after that, then it would do this red kind of outline around your dude and it will give you much more frame advantage after you parry their move, which allows you to then reversal or do a combo, which suddenly opened the entire game up. And it made it much more of a back and forth instead of just a like you attack, I parry, and then I attack back.
So they made parries basically easier and harder at the same time. So they did adjust the frame windows for parrying, but they also took out New Generation and Second Impact had two jumping parries. So if you hit forward on the stick or down on the stick when you parry something in a jump, you land in a different way. Like they eliminated that. So like you only parry forward, you land in this kind of manner. But red parries were basically made to give you an opportunity to parry out of a blocked state. So like if Chun-Li hits you with her super and you're about to get chipped out because you're blocking it and you're about to die because you're blocking all of these hits of a super move, the red parry could get you out of that. It helps. It's the no-win scenario reversed. So it gets you out of like the worst possible situation. But the timing of a red parry is freakish, right?
It is impossibly hard.
Yeah, you only see red parries in ultra high level play with people that know exactly that something is going to hit multiple times and they can turn that to their advantage.
So one of the cool things about the red parry is that for the average scrubbed here player, what it gave you this feeling of is like you're in a block, you're getting, you know, chipped out, you're about to die, and you're just flailing, and suddenly your character gets this like last store of energy, shoves the dude out of the way, and you can get free. And it's got this amazing kind of like reversal catch up Dragon Ball feel. And it's like, you're like, I'm never going to be able to do that again, but holy crap, I got out of it. It's like, it's a story mechanism.
Even today, if you were to like watch a Third Strike tournament and
you might never ever see a red parry.
Well, no, but if you do, you can hear the crowd kind of murmur like, oh, all right.
Yeah.
What's up like, now?
Oh, crap. How did that happen?
Yeah. Like, oh, now shit's going to go down.
Yeah. Cause like, you're like, oh, that dude's real. That dude is real. God damn, I love this game so much.
Getting back to sort of what you said about the music, and I look, I'm a 42-year-old white dude from Ohio, so I can't really speak to this very much. But
well,
like,
as a 41-year-old from San Francisco, let me tell you about the young people.
Well, it's Third Strike was Capcom's real attempt to start embracing their audience because the Third Strike soundtrack is all hip hop and trip hop beats.
Hell yeah,
and it's all badass sampled trip hop music, and like I really do think that they were seeing
trip hop is more like ambient chill. This is definitely more hip hop flavored. It was definitely more like jazzy, but yeah,
Okugawa was really into like jungle and really into trip hop and really especially in like the earlier games. But he really did a pivot into sampled hip hop with this game, and I think that is a really clear kind of embrace of their who they saw in America was playing these games, right?
I think there's this huge, you're actually exactly right. You're 100% right. And I think that there's this story that doesn't get told in fighting games as often as it should, which is how outside of Japan, in America, for instance, and in like Mexico and in like the Arabian countries and in Brazil and stuff, fighting games and Street Fighter were like deeply, deeply played by people of color. Like if you go to like the arcade to San Francisco in the late 90s, they're all Asian kids who are playing Street Fighter or like, you know, other ambient brown kids from the Bay Area. In New York, it was very much an Asian scene and a black scene. And these games were absolutely embraced by the African-American, the Asian-American communities, the Latino communities. And Capcom, and like when you look at the characters that they introduce later in 4 and 5 and stuff, and you're like, oh, these guys understand that the people who play this are like Arabs or Brazilians or, you know, Mexicans or Filipinos.
Or black kids from New York, right?
Black kids from New York. And like,
right.
They got that. And they're like, and I'm so, for a game that gave us Dhalsim and like, you know, all of these other horrific caricatures, I have to give them credit for learning and embracing and like accepting that there is this audience of people who want to play it. Let's give them something to feel good and make them feel like this is for them.
Yeah, right. Let's include them in the culture.
Yeah, exactly. Like they started with Marvel vs. Capcom 2 as well, with like the kind of hip hop jazziness. But Street Fighter 3, man, they straight up said, look, the black kids are the ones playing the game. We're going to give it to them. And it was fantastic.
Can I give a quick shout out? There's a YouTube channel called J Music Ensemble, and it's a New York troupe of, they call themselves the New York NYC's J-pop jazz band. And they do a lot of covers of game music, and they have a phenomenal cover of the jazzy NYC track on their YouTube channel. And I really recommend people check out their stuff because it's a bunch of real, you know, real folks getting together and they're playing this music. They play it live. And it's really, I mean, I didn't see live. I'm seeing it recording of it, but it's very, it's really exciting to sort of, you know, get caught up with it. It's almost like, it's like the small venue version of like the Symphonic Zelda concerts, you know, like it really connects. I think it's perfect for the material.
That is a better vibe, I think, than like, I wouldn't want to see a large symphonic version of this.
No,
soundtrack
exactly.
at like in an amphitheater or whatever.
No, I want to go to a club, man. I want to be
right. Definitely.
It's like when I saw the Rez soundtrack in downtown Tokyo in a club, where that's like, okay, I have discovered Nirvana. Ugh. This is the way of the world. But like I want to be in a grimy club in New York listening to these beats. This is sweet. The game is a beautiful game.
Third Strike
Chess.
It is. And I've said this on Twitter a couple of times. Other people have too. It's when we think of chess in video game terms, right? Like when the Queen's Gambit came out, this came up a lot in Twitter conversation. So like if there was a video game version of chess, which is this very old game that only incrementally changes rules over hundreds of years, what do we have? Third Strike might be that for us. I know that that is a very pretentious thing to say. I understand that. But like, it is a game that is basically encased in amber because Capcom has not touched it and seems to refuse to do so. It's still being played by a large group of people that has sort of fluctuated. It's expanded and contracted, and it's back to an expanding phase of its life. And even though the tools of the game have always been there since it's been released, people are still finding not only new combos to do in the game, but like new ways to break the game in tournaments. They're like the tier lists of this game have shifted over time. Even though Yun is still bullshit and he's still going to be on the top, like Makoto, we're going to talk about in a second. Makoto went from like a cool, popular character that was difficult to use to being like maybe S tier in this game because we figured out that Makoto can touch of death people. She gets one hit off and that's the match. So it's Third Strike is a very difficult game to learn, like chess. The stuff that's running under the hood of Third Strike are crazy complex, sort of like chess too. But like when you look at something like the Queen's Gambit, and basically throughout that entire show, they're like, oh, did you see so and so and so and so when they played in 65 or blah, yeah, blah, 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 blah. Third Strike is that kind of game. Did you see Deshiken play Sugiyama at this tournament and blah, 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 because they do something that's absolutely bonkers. People people talk like this. It's not just me. I'm not crazy. And
dude, but I mean, it's all because of Evo, the greatest tournament of all time. So I was lucky enough to be at the Battle by the Bays 1 and 2 because they were up the street from my college. Because I went to school in UC Davis, and they were both in Folsom, California, where like I used to go to play DDR a lot. So I got to go see those, and that was before I really knew who the faces and stuff were. But when you're at a real Street Fighter tournament watching people like, you know, Alex Valle play, you're like, this is sacred. I'm watching people play this game at a level that is muscle memory that is beyond anything that I can comprehend.
You are watching concert pianists play at a howl at the moon, basically.
It's like watching Bella Fleck, you know, you're like, or like watching one of these guys just masters. Like if you go online and you put in like Charles Bertaud in YouTube and watch him play the Gorillaz, like, you know, any random song, but on bass, like playing with masterful, like classical bass skill. And you're like, this is insane. I don't understand how this is happening. But when you watch this, because of this game and because of Evo later in, you know, San Luis Obispo or whatever it was, and that video that went around, and it was passed around on videotape and in real media clips, we sat and we watched Justin Wong, the greatest American player of that era, play against Daigo Umehara, who is the greatest fighting game player of all time. And they sit there in Street Fighter III in the quarterfinal matches going in, and they're going down, they're playing the slugfest we've been talking about, going down to one click of life, and you sit there, Wong does the Chun-Li super, which is like, gonna chip Ken right out. There's no way he can get out of this. And Daigo just gets the soul parry, and he just hits all like 13 or whatever of those goddamn hits, and then comes back with a super, and it's literally the greatest thing of all time. There's a reason that video has got like hundreds of millions of views. There's a reason why you can take that Evo moment 37 clip, show it to anybody who has never seen a video game, never seen a fighting game, has no conception of what is going on. And they can sit there and they will immediately understand that they've just seen one of the greatest things of all time.
My favorite thing about the video is when you watch it, I don't know if it's all versions, but there's at least one version of it where it includes sort of the lead up to that moment. And you can hear, you can see what's going to happen. So people in the audience could tell.
Let's go, Justin.
Yeah. People could tell he was going to go for the super to sort of just block him out.
Yeah. You could see the bar.
And people in the crowd are saying, don't do it. Don't do it. Like they try to warn him. Like, don't do it.
To his credit, to Justin's credit, especially in the last year or so, he started a YouTube channel.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, YouTube is so much fun.
It's awesome. He's really embraced that. He's like, this guy can't parry me. And he'll get in there and he'll let people try to Daigo parry him.
Well, he knows what his legacy is.
He is. I think that's great. I think he's really sort of embraced that. But I think something that a lot of people don't know is that the Street Fighter III games were such a flop that especially to Americans, the American fighting game scene did not like these games.
They
did
not at all.
Because there's a mechanic that the Street Fighter III games borrows from Darkstalkers, and that you can whiff medium or hard moves, like a strong punch, medium kick, whatever, and it'll build super meter. So when Third Strike came out, it was basically just like people picked Ken because his Super 3 was good. People picked Chun because her Super 2 was good. And they would sit at corners and whiff normals, and they would just jockey for space until they got a super out. It was bullshit, right? So they essentially gave up on the game. And Justin was awesome at it because he knew what Chun could do. And I will say that there's maybe an apocryphal story of like, while you were in college, Shivam, they put a Third Strike cabinet in one of those arcades, like Golfland or something like that. And everybody knew that Chun-Li was busted, but all the Chun-Li players were like, keep your mouth shut. Don't tell Capcom because we want her to be good in this game. But
I fully believe that, man, because that's vibe of the arcades at the time.
So Evo 2002 rolls around, and that's when the Japanese players were starting to come over. Like they were invited over because it was incentive for Japanese players to come and mop up these tournaments, because in Japan at the time, there was a law against you winning money in video game tournaments. Mm-hmm. So they would come to America and they would just like, you know, we'd lose our shirt to them. So there was this exhibition match in 2002. This is famous now, but for different reasons, in that Tokido, who's a famous Street Fighter player.
Oh God, I love Tokido.
He's a big famous Street Fighter V guy even to this day. But
look, I'll be honest with you, the four gods of Japanese fighting games are my heroes. I love them all.
Yeah, Daigo, Tokido, and all those guys. But Fudo. So you can find videos of this online, and it's mesmerizing. So like Justin picks Chun-Li, Takeda picks Yurian, who everybody thought was a chump. And, you know, the two of them are like, Justin backs up, starts whiffing hard punch to build meter. And Takeda sort of loses his, you know, he loses his cool. He's like, fine, whatever. So he backs up and he starts whiffing hard punch too to build meter. And all the Americans in the crowd are laughing. They're laughing at this because they know that like basically Tokido's throwing the match, right? I mean, because Justin put himself in a corner. Tokido finally gets in with a tackle with Yurian and performs what no one had ever saw before, which was like his famous corner unblockable. Yurian can do a lot of unblockable moves, but like he does a corner unblockable on Justin. No one in America has seen this stuff before because, again, they don't have the same sort of documentation that the Japanese had with their strategy guides and their videos and whatever. Like the Japanese were playing on a different planet than the Americans at the time. And you can hear like audible gasps of like, what the fuck is happening? And then Justin just gets buried. And then essentially that's when the Americans started to think there is a whole lot more to this game than we haven't seen before. They like Seth Killian's told me himself, like the Japanese taught the U.S. how to play this game.
100%. 100%. Because after that tournament, America changed. America's fighting game scene was like, oh, we've been treating this game just like a trash garbage game in the corner while we play like Tekken. And suddenly everybody turned back around. They went and looked at three and they're like, oh, there's an artistry here that we have just entirely.
Exactly. And like, and that was years after Third Strike came out. Third Strike was in 99. Evo 2002 is clearly in 2002. This is a few years later. And so that's when sort of the legacy of this game that like it was secretly this masterpiece fighting game.
Shamed into understanding it.
Evo 37, it's sort of, and you know, the proliferation of the internet and YouTube and stuff like that over time, that's where like sort of the legend of this game started to sort of grow after the fact.
God, this game is just like, it's so clean. It's so crisp. It's so balanced. Well, I mean, okay, it's not balanced. But it's just got such deep, like, even now, you can watch a Justin Wong stream of him playing Street Fighter 3, and you'll just be like, there's stuff in here. There are moves in here. There are characters that are being played that I just cannot fathom how you were doing this. How did you, like, the moves have not changed. Nobody has updated the game. It is the same game it's always been, but somebody has figured out a way to just tweak it here and here and here to make it just insanely different. And like, okay, I'll be honest. I got to play against Justin Wong once. I got to play Street Fighter against him. He was playing one-handed while talking to somebody, looking over his shoulder, and still completely took me into pieces, turned me to ash, and I was grateful for the opportunity. Right? Like he's one of those guys who's like literally one of the greatest to ever do the thing that he does. And to lose to the literal greatest who has ever done the thing he does, I think he gets a lot of flack. But the truth is Justin Wong could dismantle any other player on the planet except for Daigo. And that match, even today, even now, if I fire that stupid Evo 37 up right now, I'll still get hype as hell. I'm not going to lie.
It's yeah, so my heart skips a beat watching that now.
And the thing is, they went in the later on in the 30th anniversary re-release of Street Fighter 3, they put it in as an achievement. They're like, oh yeah, go ahead, try to do the Evo Movement 37. And then when you try it, because they just remake the entire exact scenario, and you're like, oh, this is impossible. How the hell did he do this? It is so hard. And it's like, oh my God, if Justin was like, you know, moving at the speed of light, then Daigo was moving at the speed of like quantum mechanics. He is moving at string theory speed. You know, he is like teleporting like a god. It is insane. And when you watch it, once you know the game, God, are you kidding me?
Yeah, there are reasons for like, whole books were written about like this one moment in history. You know, it is really something to behold. But yeah, I mean, Third Strike it did fix a lot of things, and it sort of altered some mechanics too to make it the game that it is, because at that point Capcom had embraced also the fact that, like, we are making a game for the hardcore. We're not screwing around with this anymore.
That's when they finally understood. They're like, look, only three people are going to play this, but they're the best of all time. So let's make it for them.
And you were going to want to watch them play it. So they altered how throws work. The Street Fighter 3 games have a mechanic that in Japan it's called the leap attack, but in the West we kind of call it the universal overhead, where every character can sort of do a little hop and hit an opponent. And if they're ducking, they're always going to get hit. They have to block it high. So in the other games, you would tap down on the stick a couple times and then hit a button, which would get in the way of your parry timing. So they adjusted it in Third Strike to just the medium and the two medium buttons, medium punch and medium kick, stuff like that, right? So they went in, they adjusted how juggles work, they fixed the universal overhead, they fixed parries, and then they added a few new characters, and some of them are great, and some of them are not great.
Some of them are also there.
they exist.
Yeah, so cast-wise, you know, the big herald is that Chun-Li finally returns.
Oh, God, and Chun-Li is, of course, one of the most popular Street Fighter characters of all time. I don't need to tell you who Chun-Li is, but Chun-Li in Third Strike was amazing. Unbelievably powerful. Stupidly powerful. Broken in half powerful.
And yeah, Chun sucks. I hate her.
Yeah, she's not fun to play as or against. I mean, she's fun to play as because you win. But she's not fun to play against. They just busted her in half. Her normals are insanely strong.
Yeah.
Like, it's unbelievable how unbalanced she is in the game.
So if Yun has the Genjin, which is a tool that you have to learn to use well, Chun-Li comes armed with basically a shotgun.
Dude.
Like, her Super 2 is awesome. And this is another maybe apocryphal story, but I believe it. One of the designers of Third Strike, because Sadamoto, I think, had moved on at this point, and they had brought in other fighting game designers into Third Strike to basically fix it. Ishizawa, I can't remember his first name off the top of my head, Neo G, Hidetoshi Ishizawa, he went to Cooperation Cup a couple years ago, which is this gigantic 5-on-5 Third Strike tournament in Japan every year. It's like Third Strike Christmas.
God, I love that.
It's awesome. I go to the gym and I watch it on my phone because it's happening in Japanese time.
Mm-hmm.
And the other people in the gym look at me like I'm a goddamn crazy person. But he went to Cooperation Cup and came right out and said, we built Chun-Li to not only attract older players, but to break the meta. We wanted her to be good. And
they succeeded.
They absolutely did.
I mean, dude, this thing hits 17 times. Having to parry 17 times, unless you are Daigo, is not going to happen. Like, it is just such a stupid, powerful move.
Yeah, more than one person in those interviews, they said that they spent the most time of all the new characters. They spent the most time working on Chun-Li. So that was, mm-hmm. it was a major project. And like, they wanted, so they, I don't know if that story is true or not, but more than one person said that they spent a lot of time on Chun-Li. So I think it's very plausible that they did indeed. Like, okay, let's get her right.
And see, I think you can tell.
Her sprites were sick.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, she's really beautifully animated. And Akiman had moved on from the project at this point too. So they had a lot of freedom now that, because Akiman is Chun-Li's dad, right? Like, he's very sort of, you know, he's kind of come off in interviews over the years as being sort of, now that he's not attached to Capcom as much, he's a freelancer. He's not afraid of throwing people under the bus and claiming what's his, and Chun-Li is his sort of thing. But mm-hmm. once he sort of moved on, they had a lot of leeway to do like whatever they wanted with that character. And it really shows if you compare her to like the alpha, how she plays in the alpha games and how she is in Street Fighter 2, Chun's a little weird. Her animations don't seem like they should match up with what those older characters are like.
It doesn't feel like old Chun-Li. Her jumps are very bizarre. That weird spinny twirly thing. But boy, howdy, is she a good character. And again, they needed to bring people back. And Chun-Li is exactly the way to do it. But you know who else they brought in, though? One of the probably the best new character ever, Makoto, who we've been talking about all night, who is basically just a judoka who comes in there, moves incredibly slowly, incredibly, like, you know, deliberately, steps up to you, punches you once with this tiny little fist that then takes off like 37% of your life. And you're like, what the hell just happened? And this chick, like, they built her on this idea of Iken Hisatsu, which is just like, you know, the notion of like to annihilate in one blow, right? It means you walk in forward, you do the 1-inch punch, and then they just like vaporize. And she's incredibly strong. Her moves are like, she's not a person that you're using a ton of her like specials, though some of her specials, like the choke or the anti-air one. I don't remember any of the names. They're all weird Japanese names. But like, she's got this one called the Hayate where she walks up, she pulls her fist back, and then just dashes forward and just stomach punches you. And it is insanely strong. She plays like Dragon Ball before they went Super Saiyajin. Like, where it's just incredibly powerful, super strong normals. And she's nutty. She is just nutty.
And she is basically like a high level tournament character from
You can't play her otherwise.
Because for like a new player, right, it's hard to sort of justify that she's got the slowest walk speed in the game, but the fastest dash in the game. She moves around like a gnat, but only sort of in very practiced hands. And she's a round thief. Makoto, this game shows you what
round thief. That's a good way to say it.
They show you the stun meter. Like in fighting games, you can get dizzied if you take enough hits. Like Third Strike clearly shows you when you are going to get stunned or how close you are to stunning somebody else, right? And Makoto does just an outrageous amount of stun with two of her supers. And yeah, that's what makes her such a threat, is that you can be very easily stunned. And like you said, Shivam, at the beginning of this, that's the round. You get stunned once and that could be it.
Yeah. And the thing that's wild is she can dash up to you like, you know, just flying in and then do the grab, the Katakusa, where she grabs you, thrusts you up by your neck. And if she's doing the EX version, that is literally 50% of your life.
Well, it's a free hit afterward too. So like you get caught with something like that. It's a free combo. So, yeah. And I've seen stuff before on the internet that says that she was originally made to be Ryu's sister. I have never found any corroboration of that. If you have it out there, person listening to this podcast, put it in the comments. Cite your sources.
I like Makoto just being Makoto, walking up, throwing you, and walking away. And she's just like, she's just here, and she's here to ruin your life, and then she's going home. And I love her. Then they also had Remy, who was like my main for a very long time, because Remy is basically like Bishonen Guile. You know, he's got beautiful long blue hair and this gorgeous open shirt and these sweet pants, and he
giant feet.
Yeah, and he's these super cool. Like, I mean, his moves suck, but his animations are sweet. Like, he's got this great like set of Sonic Booms type of supers that he does, which are just really really fun. And I don't know, I like Remy a lot, and I like his stage a lot, and I like his animation, but the character, like, dies at a sneeze. Like, dude is pathetically bad.
You know, me and my friends were huge Neo Geo fans, so we saw Remy as just sort of this weird Iori knockoff, but...
That too.
I think it was because we didn't realize that, every game, almost every game is going to have a sort of, you know, in Japanese the term is BK, right, or Bishonen, right, the beautiful man type. So like they clearly they wanted to add a beautiful type man to this game, and unfortunately, so it's like it's not really Iori. It's like it's just a style of character who Iori is also kind of a style of. But and apparently they debated. They tried a doctor, they tried a priest, they tried a prince, they had a monster at one point. Like they went through a lot of very. He was the last of the new characters they created. Apparently,
he feels like it. Like his moves are very pathetic.
Yeah, he was a character that was not made for this. I mean, he was a character that I think they put in this game, the way he plays, I should say, were put into this game that this game is not built for, right? Like throwing sonic booms, doing a flash kick, lots of charge moves. With the parry system, it doesn't eliminate that completely. There are a few really good Remy players out there, but like the game is not built around that sort of skill set. And
he's the exact wrong person for this game, basically.
Totally. And he's basically the lost character of this series. He has never been referenced since, other than like card games and stuff like that. Like Q has had references, 12 has had references, Necro.
Yeah, Remy is up Necro there with like Street Fighter 1 characters.
Right.
Just like,
right.
He happened. Okay, we get it. You want actual Guile. We'll give you actual Guile.
Exactly.
We don't need off-brand Guile. But yeah, Remy, I'm sorry. I mean, I liked him. I thought he was stylish. He was fun. But he's only good if you're playing against people who don't understand how parries work. And these days, if you're playing Street Fighter Third Strike, you're not playing those people.
No, it takes a lot of stones to pick up Remy and really try to run a tournament with a Remy. It takes a lot of guts.
Yeah.
You mentioned Q, John. Are you talking about John DeLancey?
Yes, I am. You know, the omnipotent the omnipotent Street Fighter character, Q. Q is basically a slow-moving brick wall Balrog. So he's a guy in an iron mask. He doesn't have any lines. He just kind of mumbles. But, like, he plays... He's the hidden character of the game. So now that they put Akuma on the roster, he was a hidden character in Second Impact, but it takes a certain win conditions in the arcade mode to play against Q. But Q is he's very tall. He's the tall. He and Hugo are the tallest characters in the game, which makes him a huge punching bag because he's got a very large hurt box. But he plays the exact same way Balrog does in the earlier Street Fighter games, and that he's got rushing punches of different sort of angles, right?
He moves very fast for a guy that big.
His walking speed is almost as slow or as slow as Makoto, but like the rushing punches kind of give him a little bit.
Like, I guess I just think of it like every time he moves, it's because he's doing a dashing straight or something like that, which does move much faster than his walk. His walk is definitely just like slow, lumbery, but if he does the charge attack, then he like dashes across. He's got this cool kind of echo behind him.
Yeah,
it's a really neat animation.
We have a quote here. His combination attack is supposed to look like someone who's drunkenly stumbling down the street and singing in high spirits.
That's fair.
And his idle animation is kind of like that. It's like he's just kind of like bobbing back and forth on his heels. It looks like the guy just, you know, left the bar and he's waiting for his cab.
I also love that. I think it's one of the endings, right? That sort of retcons Q and suggesting that he's sitting in the background of Ken's stage in Street Fighter 2. He's on the boat.
Ah, yeah. Not. I suppose you can make that leap. People have, I suppose, but like, yeah, there's a reference to Mulder and Scully in that ending too. But Q is also not a very big tournament get, but like, people have sort of figured out how to play with him, but you know, Q is an interesting concept that I think just didn't really pan out. But I've also seen things on the internet that suggested that Q was originally supposed to be a training dummy for the arcade mode. Like you could like find a secret way to get
it.
And for his height and size and stuff like that, again, I've never seen any citation of this. Again, I'd like to see that if you have it. But yeah. But referenced again, sort of in Street Fighter V with the G character years later.
Hmm. Yeah, and another one of those, like, you know, taken from random robot detective, like Japanese live action shows and stuff like that. He's a weirdo. He's fine. It felt like one of those just gimmick characters that they also just happened to need.
I'm always drawn to the weirdos. So that was one guy I played a lot when I bought the Dreamcast version. It's like, okay, let's. I want to figure out this Q guy.
I love him personally, but he's not for everybody.
And then there's 12.
And then there's 12.
12 sucks.
12 who looks like Necro, but is just like, 12 is such a weird character.
In a game of weirdos, he's the even weirder one.
Yeah, he's like this just milky white kind of blob, and his moves are all just like inscrutable letter combinations. He's got this one move that makes him invisible, and it's like...
That's his taunt, yeah.
It's so weird. And so hard to like, I mean, I don't know. This dude's just like bizarre.
12 is like T-1000, right? He, you know, his feet turn into axes and stuff like that. So he's like the Terminator kind of character. But 12 is interesting. This is something I sort of touched on earlier, is that like if you imported a character from like the Marvel Versus games with like lots of air dashing, you know, things like that, lots of like flying mobility and things like that, 12 does that kind of stuff in this game, which I think is interesting. But he still sucks. He's often considered a very unfinished character, maybe because of the amount of animation that they put into him and the odd things that he does. But at least in the lore. So 12 is supposed to... So Necro was made to be a living weapon. He was an android made to be a super soldier, right? So 12 is supposed to be the next generation of that. And if you look at their normal moves, they're essentially the exact same normal move with slight variations, which I always thought was a very cool, clever twist to put in there. But yeah, he sucks. He does no damage, and he takes a lot of hits, but his interesting third super is that he can become the opposing player. So if you pick Akuma, I pick 12, I can burn super to become Akuma with some slight limitations for a set period.
Yeah, those are actually really cool, kind of like sprite fake outs when he does the clones of becoming mm-hmm. the other characters. It feels a lot like Shang Tsung in Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, right.
And it's a neat little, it's a cute effect. It's a fun way to play when you've been playing a lot of Street Fighter 3 and you're just like using it to clone your buddies. But
oh, there's
like,
no better way to really screw with your opponent and be like, oh, you're going to pick so-and-so? Well, I guess so am I now. And then you turn into them like mid-match. But Capcom really wanted to sort of use this as a way to throw in other reference characters. Like if you were going to X-copy Hugo, for example, you were supposed to turn into Abigail from the Final Fight games. And I mean, I think they had other plans for stuff like that, but it never, I think they must have ran out of time.
You mentioned the similarities to Necro. I think at one point he was going to be like just a modification of Necro, like maybe like a head swap or something. But they said that as time went on, he just became an everything swap. Like so, he became more independent.
It's funny though when you use X copy to for 12 to copy Necro, then it's just like, what happened? Why?
Yeah,
this is so weird.
Can 12 X copy 12?
Yeah, there's a funny kind of like what happened animation where he just kind of like shrugs his shoulders. It's kind of funny.
And it's like, hey, bud.
There's a really cool Easter egg in this game. Is that if you beat an opponent with a light attack while they're on the ground, they sort of crumple.
Mm.
And 12's is that like he basically shrivels into a skeleton, and it's awesome.
Ugh.
It's the only good thing about 12, in my opinion.
He dies well.
He dies well, yes.
Yeah, it's like you watch him just kind of deflate. It's really gross, but really cool.
It's really icky, yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of the Third Strike in a nutshell.
Yeah.
I mean, still playable to this day, still one of the greatest games of all time. It is gorgeous. The soundtrack is stunning. The characters are deeply, deeply unbalanced, but at the same time, there's enough nuance that it's still fun to play. And I don't know, there's a reason it's been held up as the gold standard for so long. Even though fighting games have well and passed where Third Strike was, like obviously we've innovated this genre significantly since then, but this game still just stands out as a work of art.
So if you follow any other fighting game, like the Tekken crazies or the Guilty Gear people, even they know, or I shouldn't say no, but even they sort of postulate that like, oh, people are into Street Fighter. Well, I heard that Third Strike is the best Street Fighter game. And that is a debatable thing. That's semantics, right? But that's sort of one of the part of the legacy that this game has grown over time is that like, you know, people that are into the genre but not into Street Fighter, they hold Third Strike in high regard. So
it's just so funny now.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the thing that makes me a little sad about that is that Third Strike is also the most unapproachable. I mean, of all the Street Fighter games,
definitely
Street Fighter 3 is the most impossible to play and unapproachable one. And so if you go in there and you're like, well, I heard Street Fighter 3 is the best one, so I'm going to give that a try. You're just going to get shellacked because you don't have any of the muscle memory or knowledge or like buildup of understanding of what makes this good.
Like, you said it pretty well early in this podcast, Shivam, that like the stuff that you were doing in Street Fighter 2 was not working in Street Fighter 3. And that kind of turned you off. And like, if that is sort of what you're scaffolding your prior knowledge on from, then even
you're not going to understand it at all.
Other fighting games, right? Other fighting games have parry like mechanics. Many of them have straight up parry mechanics, sort of like Third Strike. But yeah, it's a hard nut to crack. But the good thing is because it's been such a cult for so long that it's finally kind of getting around to the point where like the cult is really welcoming people in. If you get on a fight,
because they're all old now, man. We're in our 40s.
We need new blood. We need new folks.
Like Alex Valle is like 50 something, man. Come on. But
if you were to get on Fightcade at any old time,
kick your ass, by the way.
You'll get your ass kicked. But like if you stop and just start asking questions, people will stop what they're doing and they will teach you all kinds of shit. Just like,
I mean, I'll be honest, in my personal opinion, 4 is a better game than 3 just for the wider audience. 4 is, in my opinion, the perfect Street Fighter game.
Turn this podcast off right now. We're done here.
It is like absolutely like much more approachable. It's very fun. The characters are all over the place and balanced and interesting and different. But 3 is like a magnum opus game. 3 is like a Rothko painting, or like it's like when you're you need to appreciate art in order to understand why 3 is so good. But once you do, you realize that this is one of the greatest games of all time. But if you're not at like that level of appreciation and you watch it and it's like a Swedish art movie that like somebody who's just used to watching blockbusters goes and sees, and they're like, it was very quiet and nothing happened for 4 hours. How is this the best movie? And they're like, but the nuance of the shadowing in that one scene. And you're like, what the hell are you talking about? I'm going to go back to watching Godzilla. Street Fighter 3, Third Strike, is that art house movie. It is, if you know what you're looking at, it is perfection. And if you don't know what you're looking at, it is definitely a thing that happened.
You heard it here first. Third Strike is a Fellini film.
I mean, where's the lie?
So, correct me if I'm wrong, but all 3 versions of Street Fighter 3 are on the Anniversary Collection, right?
Yes.
But I think only Third Strike has online play.
Yeah, because they understand the only one that you want to play online is Third Strike.
But
you
basically,
can,
yeah.
But if you have the Anniversary Collection, I'm pretty sure you can try out all the versions and see what's, you know, see how they work.
And it's, it's so much fun. The game is worth it. It's worth suffering to understand how to play, because once you unlock that stage, it's beauty. It is just beauty.
And people are out there to help you.
Yeah.
They will help you with this
game. Yeah, it's wild that the community is still alive.
Yes, it's awesome. Like Super Turbo, Super Street Fighter 2 Turbos is kind of in a similar boat. The game has been around so long, it's still played in tournaments. There are nuts out there that will help you figure this stuff out. It just takes a little bit of an inquisitive nature, I suppose. But yeah, all the games are available on the Anniversary Edition. The online is not very well liked by the community. Fightcade is questionably legal, but it is sort of accepted as the way to play it online if you want to play the game online. But it's good that like this game has sort of found its renaissance after the fact, because there's basically very little, next to nothing in the English language about this game out there, right? So in Japan, it's nuts compared to all the other Street Fighter games. That's one of the reasons that I found it so attractive, is that like no one talked about it for so long. We never got any of the real strategy guides in the US. We never saw any of those interviews. There are still, I could go to my bookshelf right now and get stacks of Japanese guides out with all of these very insightful interviews that I don't read enough Japanese, I'll never know. And they have, to this day, haven't been translated. Like there's just so much of this game that is lost or unknown to the Western world that we'll be digging through it for another 20 years, right? A lot of the art for this game, I think, has been lost, like the production art and stuff like that. Whatever is already published is just what must just be out there, because nothing else is surfacing at this point. But Street Fighter, the Street Fighter 3 series is interesting in that like it has come back around in the public, you know, in the court of public opinion. But it's sad in that there's so much we still don't know about this game from the inside.
It's been a podcast, let me tell you. And I think it's time we tie this up. We finish it. It's final round. So why don't we start? Shivam, can you tell people about yourself and where they might find you outside of this podcast?
Well, so you can find me online at Electrotal or Gearpuri Gears on Twitter mainly. I have a podcast about Magic the Gathering called Casual Magic that comes out every Tuesday, and on YouTube when I put it up there. And mainly I talk a lot about Magic the Gathering, but I like coming on Retronauts to talk about my actual favorite game. So you could end.
That's great. I would like to talk to you about more Magic sometimes, because I've gotten hard, fallen back hard into Magic recently, and I think
it turns out that I am one of the legitimate world experts. I help run the format called Commander, which is the most popular way to play Magic. So I am happy to talk about it anytime you want.
Very cool.
Actually, there's a Recurrent episode I did about Magic, so you should go and listen to that.
Yes, we did. It was like a combo episode, like half.
Yeah, it's a dual. Magic, right. Parrish was like, "I want to hear Shivam talk for 2 hours." So here, Civilization and Magic, go.
I want to talk to you about Suikoden. I love Suikoden.
Oh, my favorite game of all time.
Yeah, well,
John, why don't you tell people about yourself?
You can find me on Twitter at John_Learned. That's LEARNED. That's my name. Well, you can also find me on YouTube, just at youtube.com/JohnLearned, or just search for the Annotated Symphony of the Night or the Annotated Third Strike. I've done other things on YouTube too, some little videos. Diamond, you were on my sort of 25th anniversary Symphony of the Night live stream. Archived that on YouTube too. That was a ton of fun. But you can also find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/JohnnyPants7, where I stream Third Strike every Friday at lunch. So during the pandemic, I was at home working from home like everybody else was. And basically, I would teach my kid while also working in the morning. And then my kid would go downstairs and my wife would teach her in the afternoons. And like after that was over for me, I would just fire up Third Strike on my lunch break on Fightcade, and I started streaming it every day. So now that I'm not working from home as much, I stream. There's a Third Strike lunch break on Fridays at noon Eastern, and then we do a Dungeon and Tonic Third Strike happy hour on Fridays, a little bit in the afternoon. So Eastern time.
I see what you did there.
You see what I did there? Yeah.
And John, didn't you make a single video of, was it Demon's Souls? You played Demon's Souls for 10 hours?
Right. So when Demon's Souls hit its 10th anniversary, Demon's Souls is in my top five. And right. So I, for its 10th anniversary, I basically live annotated it, and it took me 9 hours, and it should have taken me a whole lot less than that. So yeah, if you really got nothing to do for a weekend, there's that on YouTube as well.
So who's your main?
In Third Strike?
Yeah.
I play the Shotos, mostly Dengen Ryu, but I'll play Yurian. I like playing Q. There's a couple. I hate the twins. I hate them. I hate them. I hate them. So I don't touch them. But I don't really jump around the cast very much. But mostly Ryu.
Hmm. I love me a Ken or a Yang. I'm just, they've been my boys for 20 years, and it's not going to change now.
Ken is awesome in that game.
I never got good at it, so I don't really have a main, but I definitely, like, I played a lot of Akuma, I played a lot of Q, I played a lot of Yurian. I thought Yurian was pretty cool.
Yeah, like, oh man, I wish Street Fighter 3 had like a Zangief, because that's the guy I want to play, but there's no good grapplers in that game. Which, for a game that's so much about melee, you would think there would be, but there really just isn't. So it goes.
They were planning on putting him in. They were planning on making a fourth game, and they never really got too far, but Zangief and Sagat were supposed to be in it, and they put in all of their development tools into the Dreamcast version of the game, and that's what the system direction menu is. Ishizawa's talked about this in one of the art books, but sadly, no fourth strike.
As for me, well, at first, as for Retronauts, this is Retronauts, and if you're listening to us, thank you very much. If you'd like to support us, we welcome that. You can go to patreon.com/retronauts, and for $3 a month, you get episodes 1 week early in a higher audio quality. If you pay $5 a month, which is, that's only $2 more, it's nothing, you get 2 bonus episodes every month, and you get a weekly column from me, and I read you the column too, if you don't want to read it. It's really nice. I put music in there. In fact, I did a column about the 25th anniversary of Street Fighter 3 earlier this year, so you can go back and listen to that if you pay us. You have to pay us. Outside of that, if you want to just look at me personally, I am on Twitter as Fight Club, F-E-I-T, my last name, C-L-U-B, the English word. And I Twitch. I have not used Twitch in a while, but I do want to get back to Twitch streaming things, because I like streaming things. I like it. It's fun. And I think that's it. So last words from anybody. According to the grade judge system, what do you think? This podcast was very successful, but did we get S rank or?
MSF.
MSF?
I don't know, man. I just put in another quarter and hit start to get past that.
Good night. So what's it gonna be? Trapped in a new world, Street Fighter 3. The third chapter, so what's it gonna be?
what's it gonna be? Champion of the world, Street Fighter 3. The third champion, so what's it gonna be? Champion of the world, Street Fighter 3. Make your first move, so what's it gonna be? Champion of the world, Street Fighter 3. The third champion, so what's it gonna be? Champion of the world, Street Fighter 3.